We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
Number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
I will not agree to another debate. The answer is no. I am not going to have any more debates. We don't need any more debates. I've thrown out my position. There will be no more
Deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
I will not agree to another debate.
Ben, we're having difficulties.
Just hold on a second.
It's all just a dream. And it's time now to wake up. It's 11 minutes after 10 o'clock, and welcome back to reality. The program's Brain Damage, Eric Corley with you on this glorious Saturday night, the 22nd day of the 10th month of the 1988th year of whatever lunacy we're all involved in. And what lunacy it is. Good evening. Good evening to everyone. And we have all kinds of amazing things to do tonight. And we welcome your phone calls at 632-6901. And what better way to start things off than to look at what's going on in the crazy world we all share. All that's needed now to stiffen penalties for drug crimes is President Reagan's signature. And that's all but guaranteed. An anti-drug bill passed by the House and Senate authorizes, among other things, death sentences and some drug-related murders. It also calls for creation of a cabinet-level drug czar. Senate Majority Leader Robert Byrd says the bill has a simple message. Don't do drugs. The country will not tolerate it. I understood it. Within the drug bill are some provisions that don't have any readily apparent relationship to the anti-drug effort. The most controversial is some anti-obscenity language. Conservatives stood their ground and forced its inclusion. Many liberals and moderates who opposed it may win in the end, expecting it to be struck down in court as unconstitutional. Interesting. I wonder what that's all about. The drug bill is one of the very last measures demanding action by members of Congress, many of whom have been straining at the bit to hit the re-election campaign trail. Early this morning, while much of Washington was sound asleep, the final votes were cast, the final gavel slammed down, and the 100th Congress was relegated to the streets and the history books. Stay tuned for the 101st Congress, premiering next January. Same Capitol, same issues, mostly the same faces. Michael Dukakis hopes viewers tuning in tonight for the TV miniseries North and South will stay tuned to hear his proposals for the North, South, Midwest, and West. The Democratic presidential campaign has purchased 5 minutes on ABC to take Dukakis into voters' living rooms. Dukakis is trying the direct-to-the-people approach in another effort to blunt Republican claims that he's soft on crime. Dallas police are still trying to sort out just what happened last night on the Texas State Fair Midway. Fairgoers stampeded in panic as gunfire broke out. The panic ended with one dead and three wounded. Police presence has been heavy at the fair, where in 1985 there were 57 rapes, murders, assaults, and robberies reported. Idaho has refused delivery of a boxcar full of radioactive waste, sending it back to the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant in Colorado. Idaho Governor Cecile Andrus announced this week that his state would no longer accept low-level nuclear waste for temporary storage. He wants to force the federal government to open a permanent storage facility in New Mexico. Israel's election next month was one focus of a summit today. Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak and PLO Chairman Yasser Arafat met with King Hussein in Jordan. An Egyptian spokesman says the Arab leaders want Israeli voters to know that there are Arabs who want peace. And he adds that if the Israelis don't, the Arabs will have something else to say. OPEC's biggest members have ended 3 days of talks in Spain with an agreement on production limits to recommend to the whole cartel, or maybe they haven't. Yeah, the Nigerian oil minister who chaired the Madrid meeting says the participants agreed to a ceiling of 17.5 million barrels a day, but Indonesia's representative insists several proposals are still being considered. And that's the fascinating news of the hour, as brought to us by the Associated Press. Thank you very much, little machine in the other room that goes clickety-click, 24 hours a day. It's 15 minutes after 10 o'clock, and if I can find a weather forecast, I'll be happy to tell you it's 7 degrees outside, and it's 45 on the Fahrenheit scale. Tonight we're expecting variable cloudiness, chance of a sprinkle, low in the mid-40s. Westerly winds diminishing to 10 to 15 miles per hour. For tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds, high in the mid-50s. And tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, 40% chance of showers, low in the mid-40s. And for Monday, rain likely, high in the mid-50s. Probability of rain is 70%. Once again, 7 Celsius, 45 on the Fahrenheit scale here at Broadcast Studios, beautiful downtown Stony Brook. And we're here tonight to talk about all kinds of things. So why don't we do something different this week and just start off by going to the phones. You know, I won't say anything right away. We'll just talk first, and then I'll go into some of the subjects that I wanted to go into this week. 632-6901, good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
There, guess who this is?
Let's see, Pope John Paul II.
Yes.
Well, Pope John Paul II's on the line, Jim.
That
certainly is incredible. I've tried calling you several times. You never return my calls, but now that you have finally, what have you got to say?
It's not Pope John Paul, first of all.
Don't do that to me, okay? I'm very gullible. I believe things like that.
Yes, don't all of us.
Okay, well, what is it you want to say to our throngs of listeners out there?
What?
What is it you want to say? Communicate. Get out across the airwaves.
Yeah, besides, hi, Mom.
Okay, that's something.
Did you think of something to do the show about yet?
I've got plenty of subjects. There's always something to talk about, you know? There's plenty of things going on, so that's not a concern of mine.
I'm not giving away, a station secret now, but, 15 minutes ago, not 15 minutes ago, that was 15 minutes ago, half an hour ago, so 45 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
You're trying to figure out what to do the show about.
Oh, well, you know, I say that to people. I say, I have no idea what I'm doing, but actually I know exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's what you want us to think.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, we might go and watch network TV.
Well, that would be a fate worse than death, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, but... Oh, yeah, so you don't have the number to the Olympic Pavilion.
I was supposed to call the Korean Olympic Village again, but I left that number at home. I still have it, though, and probably in a week or two we'll give that a call.
How about doing a call Barbara Bush instead?
I don't want to talk to Barbara Bush. I've got nothing to say to her. She has nothing to say to me. And that's just the way it is, you know?
Yeah, that's that argument you had with her last week, right?
I don't want to discuss it. It's gotten way out of proportion. It really has. And, you know, I think...
It's been a field day with that one.
I think the press has covered this thing disgustingly. I mean, all the implications there, they just aren't there, at least not on my part. I could say a thing or two about her, but I won't.
Yeah, I know, but, I mean, the papers had a field day with it, remember, 2 weeks ago after the story came out about you and what happened with Barbara Bush. I mean, it was terrible.
Let me just say this. My attorneys have contacted her attorneys. And if she does not stop calling my house, I will certainly press charges against her.
I don't know, Eric.
When she becomes the first lady, if she becomes the first lady, she'll be the first lady to be brought up on charges of harassing a civilian like me.
You mean the letter she had Ed Meese write to you that was published in the.
Well, no one else knows what that means, so I suggest we just evade that topic.
Where was Eric?
Oh, boy, that's Jim. Jim's here.
Where was Eric?
Where was I?
Yes, where was he?
I think that's my own business, you know?
I'm sure it is. I agree wholeheartedly.
Anything else to say, strange caller?
Strange caller? And further,
Okay, well, that's very good, then. We're going to go to some more calls.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi.
Hello.
This is Seth.
Hi.
And when I usually call, I don't usually have anything to complain about.
Okay, now you do.
Now I do, yes.
What's
I
that?
Do. Okay.
Go ahead.
Last night at Stony Brook, there was the homecoming thing, and there was a homecoming concert.
Uh-huh.
Susie and the Banshees.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, I don't know whose idea of a joke this was, but it was raining and pouring out there.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
It's traditional Fall Fest weather, but go ahead.
And I stood online for about 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
Waiting to get in.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had tickets and everything, and I was towards the front of the line, and they made us stand out there for about 2 hours in the pouring rain, and, you know, I want some sort of explanation.
Well, it's hard to explain these things. Sometimes people just mess up, you know, and...
Did you hear about this?
No, this is the first I've heard about it. They made you stand out in the rain for 2 hours.
Yeah, they made... And if anyone else is...
There's no excuse for that, obviously. I mean, there's no excuse for that period. They can let you into the place early. They can rearrange their schedules and let you in. They cannot let people stand out in the pouring rain. I mean, you know, I've been to concerts in many, 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 many places all over the country, and I've never had to stand outside for a long period of time, with the exception of a concert that was outdoors. But you expect it to be outdoors in an outdoor concert, you know?
Hmm.
But this was an indoor concert, right?
Right.
So you should not have been waiting outdoors. That's crazy. And
sad
to say, that's typical of Stony Brook. That kind of thing happens all the time here.
Really? Because, I mean, I didn't know if it was custom or anything.
I guess you could say it's kind of customary to have things like that happen. I mean... This whole Fall Fest thing is a great idea, except, you know, I don't know why it was postponed until late October when it's freezing cold outside.
Yes.
You know, I was just over there a little while ago, and there's about 7 people over there at this huge carnival that's, you know, over in the athletic fields, which actually is kind of a misleading statement because it's not really in the athletic fields. It's in a certain section of the athletic fields surrounded by this fence, so that if you actually walk across the field, you have no way of getting into the thing. You have to, like, find the entrance. And, you know, I was going to this school when Fall Fest was a fun occasion, when the place was crowded with people and everyone just sort of milled about, but it's, I don't know, I just don't find it fun when it's so controlled and you know, tightly monitored and everything like that. Plus, it's really cold outside, and...
That was probably the worst part, because it wasn't just the rain, but every now and then you get this breeze coming through.
Yeah, the killer winds of winter, you know?
Mm. And, what was I going to say? Well, you know, if anyone else is listening who is there, I just want to hear their points of view on it, like, so I hope they call up. But, you know, we just... I don't know, it kind of lent to a thing of community, though, because we'd sit there and then we'd stamp our feet and mutter a few obscenities and, like, yell at the people at the doors, and then we'd sort of, like, talk to each other, so...
Well, the best thing I can suggest to you is to write letters. Write letters to the local newspapers. Make sure everybody knows that you were treated like garbage, literally. Because you put garbage out in the rain for 2 hours, and you don't think twice about it. That's that shouldn't have to happen, no matter what kind of concert you're going to see.
Oh, well.
Sorry it happened. I mean, you know, we didn't have anything to do with it here, fortunately, but it's the kind of thing you shouldn't let go unremarked.
Mm.
Don't you agree, Jim?
Absolutely. As long as you want to make some...
Have you ever stood outside,
you know,
in the cold rain for 2 hours waiting for a concert?
I don't think I ever have, but I can empathize with the feeling about it. I have waited outside in the cold rain for other reasons and not found it pleasant at all.
Let me just ask our caller, was the concert worth it?
Yeah.
It was a good concert?
Yeah, it was a pretty good concert.
All right, that's something anyway.
Susie puts on a good show.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, there have been a lot of good concerts. There was Camper Van Beethoven last Wednesday, Susie and the Banshees, Rick Danko, and Jorma Kekkonen tonight.
I think Olaf Hatoun is supposed to be appearing tonight, actually.
Really? Well, that's great.
I don't want to start any...
There's Fishbone coming up, and Burning Spear, and Jimmy Cliff, and there's all kinds of things. So, but, you know, again, it has to be managed in a proper way, or, you know, what good is it?
Mm.
So, hopefully people won't suffer like that in the future. At least not on this campus.
Well, what I'm curious about is, were there ever any instances, not only on this campus, but elsewhere, that you know of people being made to wait indoors to get admittance into an outdoor concert?
If there was, this would be the first place, probably.
Oh.
Thanks for calling.
Sure.
632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, Sandra Goldberger.
Hello. How are you?
Pretty good.
What's
Sorry
up with
I haven't
you?
Called in a while.
Well, it's okay. We continue on. You know, life goes on.
So, how has your past show, your show for the past 3 weeks?
You haven't called for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's been
wow.
that long.
It's been pretty good. Obviously missing your voice, but it's been surviving.
There's something that you missed in the that you must have missed in the news, or it didn't make the papers because it was the biggest news to wrestling fans all around the world.
Oh boy,
Hulk Hogan is in the hospital.
Okay, that's certainly
yes
revealing to me.
No, because this guy and his manager walked up to him and they maced him in the head, and then they took a police nightstick and they were beating him over. And then they handcuffed him to one of those big, big railing things.
And he couldn't take that, huh?
What?
He couldn't take that.
No. Well, he just went to the hospital.
Wow. Well, that's sad to hear, I guess.
Yeah. And I hope everybody out there likes Dukakis, because Dukakis is... my babysitter said he's the worst. He's the greatest. He's for abortion, and I think... that abortion is good.
Well, you know, I was reading the Times today, and they said that they expect the lowest voter turnout in 40 years. And that's not going to help Dukakis any, because a lot of those people are undecided. A lot of those people haven't registered. And
no, I know.
Can you imagine that? The lowest turnout in 40 years?
Yeah, I know this girl. Her mother is going to go, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, who's the biggest schmo?
Uh-huh. Well, I wish her all the luck in the world, not only in that, but in just about everything else she tries.
Yeah, because I think abortion is good because, say...
Wait, you think abortion is good?
Yes.
How do we jump into that? Okay, well, go ahead anyway.
Because Dukakis is for it.
Uh-huh.
Well, I just wanted to ask Andrew, if I could, does he mean that he thinks abortion is good, or he thinks the someone having a choice to decide whether or not they want an abortion is good?
Yes, that's what I mean.
No. I don't recall ever hearing anybody say abortion's really a good thing, you know? It's
No, it's not. I'm not saying it's good, but it depends on the situation.
Uh-huh.
Because what if a mother really wants to keep her baby and she can't afford him to have him with her, and he dies of starvation or...
Well, aren't there lots of people who want to adopt, though?
Yes, but what if she wants to keep the baby?
Uh-huh. Well, then, if she wants to keep... Wait.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
Okay, I see your point, but...
I didn't know I had one. Wait. Well, never mind. Let's just skip this. It's a controversial issue.
Yeah.
We know that. And it's one that we've so far managed to avoid talking on this show. Anything else about Dukakis or Bush?
No, but... just to show you how unpatriotic Bush is, remember the time where he missaid, what was it?
Pearl Harbor Day.
Yes. He said today is Pearl Harbor Day and it was 2 months away.
Uh-huh. He said September 7th instead of December 7th, yes.
Yeah. So that shows something.
Uh-huh. No, it shows that he really doesn't know what day it is.
Yeah.
He really does not know. And that's he's right in tune with a lot of other people in this country who don't know basic facts like that.
Yeah. Uh-oh. I'm sorry. The Germans are attacking.
Oh, boy. Kids today, you know, what are you going
to
do?
I guess the pressure just got to them. You think if they gave away dish sets or something, like door prizes, people would come out for the election?
What were they going to do? They were going to have some sort of tax incentive or something for people who vote?
I think so. That actually was, I think, is a serious proposal to give tax credits to people who vote.
I could see why people are disillusioned, you know, and why they think it doesn't really make a difference.
Oh, I can understand that, but I still... No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I don't know what, you know.
Oh, I think it's very important for people to vote. Excuse me. I think it's very important for people to vote because I think that even if it means writing in a candidate that is not listed specifically on the voting machine ballot, the reason why I say that is my personal feeling is that if certain individuals in government or looking to get into government get the idea that people don't care at all, nobody shows up,
mm-hmm.
then they'll try and get away with certain things. And I'm talking, when I say to vote, I'm talking about voting for just at all. In other words, voting for either party or any candidate, whether or not they're specifically on the ballot or not. You know, you can always do a write-in vote, because if someone gets the idea, if enough people with the wrong ideas about subversion of democratic principles, and I say that word democratic with a small d, if they get the idea that enough people are not interested, they may try and pull some things that do subvert democracy.
Uh-huh.
And again, I'm not talking about the Democratic Party here. I'm talking about the democratic process.
Uh-huh.
And so I think it's important for people to show that they're at least interested enough to go out and vote.
I don't know if you've been following what's been going on overseas, but just the other day in England, they made some pretty dramatic dramatic laws have made their debut over there, including broadcast people over there are no longer allowed to speak to people from certain organizations, such as the IRA.
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowed to speak to them, period.
Mm-hmm.
The BBC can no longer talk to anybody in the IRA, and newspapers, I believe, are the same way. Also, people who are quote-unquote terrorists or involved in a terrorist crime do not have the right to remain silent.
Mm-hmm.
And to the average person, that sounds like a reasonable thing. You know, it's a terrorist should not have those kind of rights. Yeah, but then it's going to go to drug offenders and to other kinds of criminals. Before you know it, the law is just going to evaporate into nothing.
And I agree 100%. You could have situations where people are simply accused of a crime, and a law is passed saying that if you're accused of a certain crime,
uh-huh.
let alone whether or not it's been established that you committed the crime, that you can be prevented from retaining a right to remain silent. As you say, you can just extend this and extend this. It can happen very gradually.
Yeah, well, I mean, look in Israel. In Israel, you can be held, certainly if you're Palestinian, but I think it applies to other people as well. You can be held for 6 months without being charged with a crime,
mm-hmm.
and that six-month period can be renewed over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're talking England, Israel, and the United States, which are supposed to be three of the leading democracies
mm-hmm.
in the world. And look at these laws that are suddenly, appearing. It just seems, I don't know, this anti-terrorist thing doesn't come on the heels of any major terrorist attack. So I don't understand the reasoning for it. It's just a gradual eroding of the democratic way. And I just can't imagine 4 years of Bush or 8 years of Bush and what's going to happen at the end of that. Maybe people will wake up, maybe we'll just watch it all fade away into something else.
Well, it's certainly...
It seems like the countries we call totalitarian are becoming more, more free and open, and the ones that are supposed to be democratic are becoming more confined and secretive.
Maybe there's some...
Something weird's going on.
Some averaging out going on, but that's why I think it's important for people to just show they're at least interested enough to go at least to the general election, let alone the primaries.
Even if you're right, an obscene comment on the ballot card,
Just to show. I mean, we're not advocating specifically that you write an obscene comment, but.
Well, no, I mean,
but,
let's say a thousand people in Stony Brook, okay, wrote. Some obscene comment or just voted for some crazy person, that would make the papers. That would definitely make the papers, and people would see it, and other people would do the same thing. Before you knew it, you have 50,000 people voting for crazy people, and then those 50,000 people would realize that they have some power, and
Very
they could
point.
Vote for a real candidate someday.
Very good point.
And it would mean something.
But again, I'm sure that we're not advocating that specifically that somebody should run out and write an obscene comment, but that I think what you're saying is that even if it's for an initially frivolous idea, it's not really all frivolous, because it would establish
that there are
many more eligible people who can vote.
All I'm saying is when you go to the ballot box, apart from tearing people apart who are standing there, do whatever you feel is right. And, if that involves writing something that expresses your feelings... That's your right.
Oh, sure.
You have that right.
Of course. No question. Is there some statute against that, perhaps, against writing an obscenity on an official...
It doesn't have to be obscene. It can just be like, you know, sarcastic.
Mickey Mouse, whatever.
But I don't think there is any statute against that.
Oh, but
what is that? It's a secret ballot, how are they going to prosecute you?
That's true. That's a good point. Well, the thing is, you say tearing up people who are standing there. What did you mean by that?
I meant, you know, getting violent and trashing the place.
Oh, you're not advocating that.
That's not the Democratic way.
No, but, you know, the thing is with write-in ballots, if I'm not mistaken, in some localities, you may have to do it in advance of Election Day, but to my understanding, it's not a very involved process.
Uh-huh.
And if someone...
Well, absentee ballots you have to do...
Write-ins, you may have to make some previous application. You don't have to tell a person to whom you're for whom you're writing in the ballot.
Well, I'll say this: if you're vocal about your beliefs and things you're not satisfied with, and that involves writing letters and talking to other people and just sort of getting your views across and finding other people who agree with you. A good example is this whole debate farce. I see more people now finally saying the debates are ridiculous.
Yes.
They're not real debates.
Right.
I see more people saying that this year, and that may make a difference next time. Either we won't have any debates,
mm-hmm.
or we'll have a real debate where candidate A addresses candidate B, and everyone else stands back and just lets them go at it.
I agree.
Imagine how revealing that would get if you just give them 2 hours to get at each other's throats where they all talk at once and that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. I'd love that.
Me too. I think it would be a marvelous idea.
And what the hell? Throw Lyndon LaRouche in there too, you know?
Yes, by all means. And speaking of things that are farcical, how do you feel about these polls that are taken?
I don't know. You know, it's awfully strange how ABC News is able to project winners with 1% of the of the vote counted, and they're right, and that's how it turns out. You know, I don't think all the people are exactly the same. So how do they know? I don't know. I'm puzzled by them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I like to know these things. I like to know how many people thought Bush won and how many people thought Dukakis won in those quote unquote debates they had.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say. You know, I like to see as many different polls as possible, I guess, and compare them. I mean, I'm sure a poll taken by one news organization isn't going to be exactly the same as a poll taken by another. So I guess the more the better. That sort of averages the whole thing out.
No, I see.
Also, the ways in which you you take the poll has to be taken into account, because if you give somebody a 900 number to call, obviously poor people aren't going to call this number that costs money to call to register a vote, and rich people will call it a lot. You know, there's no limit on how many times you can call the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, perhaps something that could tie into a cable TV system. But then again, you have poor people that won't have cable TV.
Right.
There has to be a fair way that people from all over can be polled.
Right.
I mean, you could say, okay, so we'll call them. But a lot of people don't have phones, you know?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And some people don't answer their phones. There's really no way to do it.
That's right, and for that matter, I think you bring up a good point about people with lower income. The fact that, in general, the political process now is for many candidates is for candidates who are either wealthy enough or well-connected enough to raise tremendous amounts of money.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to let out of the process people who don't have that wherewithal, uh-huh. which doesn't seem to be totally balanced.
Let's go back to the phone, 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yeah,
Eric, I'm calling you.
Sounds like Sammy.
It is.
Yeah, Sammy, how you doing?
How can you tell it was me?
Your voice.
Oh, well, I use my voice on the phone.
Oh, that's your giveaway then.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm caught. You know, it's the radio station at Dukakis headquarters or something?
Are we talking too much like we're in favor of Dukakis?
Are you in favor of Dukakis?
You're
just as much as said as much.
I think we've said more anti-Bush things than pro-Dukakis things. I don't know. I don't recall saying anything really pro-Dukakis.
Well, I tell you, I watched the debate. You know, the debate on television?
Right.
And the only thing the debate showed the American people was how short Dukakis is. He had to stand on like a box when he got behind a podium. But when he shook hands with Bush, he's a little short guy.
Uh-huh. And people actually take that into account, and, you know, it means something.
Well, I don't like the man. I don't care for Bush neither, but Dukakis, I don't know. I'm
uh-huh.
not a Democrat, and I'm not a Republican.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I'm not allowed to vote.
Well, that's my problem. Not that I'm not allowed to vote, but I'm not a Democrat or a Republican, and I'm not allowed to vote in the primaries because I'm independent, you see, and... no one's asked my opinion yet. these two jokers are running for office, and I haven't had any say in who they are, you know?
Well, you know, the two-party system is really just the banks split the system. And the banks is what's rolling these two parties, so to speak. There's never supposed to be no two parties in the system. It's supposed to be a republic, not a democracy anyway. No one knows, no one remembers. Those people are all dead that wrote the Constitution. You were talking about laws that get out of hand. Abraham Lincoln, he said that if a law goes against common sense, then that law is being misinterpreted for what it's supposed to have been.
And there are many laws that go against common sense, yes.
That's about all the ones I ever come across.
Well.
What do they tell you? They say if you spit in the subway, they lock you up. But if you throw up, you get away with it.
That is one of those unfair things, yes.
Well, that's just a supposing type thing.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, you do talk a lot. You're like, really going to vote for Dukakis, eh?
I'm not sure who I'm voting for, to tell you the truth. I might just write one of those
who's
little comments
on the card. Who's running
independent
ticket?
What's that?
Who's the independent candidate?
The independent candidate. I don't know. You see, it's not an independent party. There is a party, I believe, called independent. I'm independent of everything. That's what I try to be, anyway.
Yeah, there's registration.
The guard's coming.
Okay.
Take it easy.
Talk to you later.
Take care.
Guard's coming.
There's a designation of independent, which I guess it's not. I don't know that it is a party. I think it's just the fact that a person prefers to remain non-affiliated with any political party, which I personally think is fine. If someone views their personal political philosophy as one that they don't want to be aligned with a specific party, they can register independent, and they can still vote in the general election. They can't, in many places, vote in primaries. But I can understand them not doing that from the standpoint that they want to remain independent. But I just can't understand. I shouldn't say that. I'm just saying that I'm disappointed that people don't at least go out and show enough interest to just show up for a general election. And they've been running some effective public service announcements on some stations where they quote statistics of people in countries that are known as being less than enlightened in terms of the democratic process, excuse me, and indicating that they quote a figure, a certain number of people in that country want to vote but can't vote.
Uh-huh.
And then they say the United States has a certain number of people that are eligible to vote but don't vote.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's a very, very telling point that, and I don't say this to be for the purpose of making this statement a tearjerker, but literally people in this country have died for the right to vote. And I think it's something for people to keep in mind. I don't mean it as a guilt trip. I mean that people should realize, I think, that it's one of those, that voting, the right to vote, is one of those things that can easily be taken for granted. But I think that it's something that should not be, because the alternative can be frightening. It can happen very gradually. But rights can be eroded away, and eventually people can be in a position where they can't easily gain back those rights. But voting, even in situations if people feel that it doesn't make any difference, I think it does make a difference to vote, because it still shows that a certain number of people in the population at least take enough of an interest in what's happening in government to at least show up at the polls.
I hear occasional vibrations. You hear those, Jim? I think they're shooting fireworks off outside.
I guess that's what it must be.
Yeah. They say that the Fall Fest, which is going on now, would be held rain or shine, but certain activities may be moved to the Union Building, which is our building. So perhaps they've moved the fireworks downstairs.
Inside the Union Building?
Well,
I doubt it.
You doubt it?
Inside
really?
The building?
Knowing what you know about the way things work here at Stony Brook, you would say you doubt it.
But even that, I mean, even for here, I think that would be...
All I know is the building is shaking every now and then.
Maybe it's from the fireworks outside. I hope that's what
it is.
Well,
I just hope they don't send one our way. That's all. But that's what appears to be going on. Let's hope that's what... There's no revolution downstairs or something. Anyway, 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello.
Yes, I caught you away from the phone there, huh?
We were just talking about not only people have given up their lives to vote, but it's very ironic because now they're voting for corpses.
They're voting for corpses?
Yeah.
Explain that.
Choice of candidates.
Can you explain that a little bit?
The choice of candidates.
You would liken them to corpses, huh? Who is more of a corpse, Dukakis or Bush?
It's hard to tell. Stiff is a stiff.
That's you got a point there. Okay, well that's one way of looking at it.
What about these reports of George Bush's alleged affairs?
I'd like to hear more about them, but apparently no one is coming forth with information. However, if the person who is involved with George Bush does exist and is listening, for God's sake, lady, what are you waiting for? Or if it's not a lady, you know, I don't know. Whoever you are, come forward quickly before it's too late.
The European press is having a field day with it.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to hear what the European press says about it, because...
Well, they say he has two affairs going on.
Two affairs?
And one of his mistresses shot at him.
Uh-huh. Okay. Where'd they get this information from?
Well, it might be coming out this week in the Washington Post.
Well, that would be good. I prefer it there than the National Enquirer.
Well, what is it about the Washington Post? They always have a knack for coming out with these stories.
Yeah, making it timely, too.
Yeah.
A good scandal is the only thing that could, at this point, prevent Bush from getting into office.
Well, that's what happened when the leaks of this story came out. Did you see what happened to the stock market that day?
Yeah, why was that? I never could understand how the stock market reacts to those things.
What do you mean, how can you not understand?
Well, I mean, if Dukakis had a scandal, do you think the stock market would react?
Not in quite the way.
Why is that? Does the stock market has more faith in George Bush?
Well, you know, it's the whole corporate structure that runs the country anyway, so they got a little scared.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
With Republicans.
Wow. Okay, well, thanks very much for calling and enlightening us. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Eric?
That's a very bad line. You have to call back. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. You know, this person's been ringing for a very long time, and there's nobody there. Somebody there?
You think they waited all that time just to hang up on us?
You know, sometimes people, they call us, and then they put the phone down, they do other things. Mm. And,
maybe we should try that. Want to go do some... Want to go? Here, I think I will. Okay. I wanted to see something over here at the other end of the room. I think I'll do that. Yep. Well, let's see. I want to adjust something here. Can you knock over something?
No, I'm perfectly content here with my margarita. Yes. Phones have lit up all over again, so we're going to move out of the cocktail party and go back to business. We'll be back later, though, we promise. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, you hung up before.
I hung up before because you had a lousy line.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Don't get a lousy line again, we won't hang up. Go ahead, what's up?
Yeah, you know what you said about the stock market, why it reacted?
Uh-huh.
Like that... It's because if Dukakis is elected, then he'll raise the taxes, and then Wall Street wouldn't like that because that means all the corporations would have to pay more taxes and they'd have less profits.
Yeah, I guess there's a very direct connection there.
Wall Street wants George Bush to win because he says he's not going to raise the taxes.
I know, but when you think about that, you know, he says, I'm not going to raise taxes. Isn't that such a selfish way of looking at things? Because that's your first concern is taxes, your taxes, how much money you have to spend. What about all the problems that we have? What about all the messed up lives that people are leading and the nuclear holocaust we seem to be headed for? Isn't that more important than taxes? What's that?
We're not going to have a nuclear war, but that's another argument.
The possibility exists. As long as there's one nuclear weapon in the world, the possibility exists.
Yeah, but if there's one nuclear weapon, it'll be a very short war.
Uh-huh.
Just put it that way.
That's true, but it still won't be pleasant.
For the people who are hit, no.
And I'd rather pay $1,000 in taxes than have that happen.
I mean, yeah, I know that, but what does that have to do with Wall Street?
Well, it just characterizes the selfish attitude that George Bush seems to bring to light.
Well,
and
no,
that's if people vote for him because they don't want to pay taxes, they don't want to pay more money for something, regardless of what it is, that tells you something about those kind of people.
But it's not that. It's the investors who who actually do that. You know, they're people who actually buy the stocks. Because they, I mean, pretty much if everybody looks out for their own interests, sort of, then
I think so.
Okay, also what you were saying before, I see about how our rights are eroding slowly and how we might be able to use our rights even if we're accused of a crime.
Yeah.
Do you ever hear of or read a play called The Crucible about the Salem witch trials?
Yes. I read it. I don't remember it, though, at the moment, but...
Yeah, it sounds suspiciously like that.
Uh-huh. Well, a lot of people see that, you know, and they, people in the past see it, people in the present see it. And I have a feeling in the future a lot more of us will see it.
Because, I mean, it sounds very suspiciously like it, because as soon as one person was accused of something, even though, I mean, I don't know whether you think so, but witchcraft is a bunch of baloney. But it's like somebody was accused of it, and then they say, well, you have two options here, right? Either you can say you're guilty of it, and we'll throw you in jail for a couple months, and then we'll let you live. But if you say, I never did anything, then we'll kill you.
Uh-huh.
It kind of just sticks your choices a little bit.
I believe that was written by Arthur Miller, and I think that he was writing that as an allegory, although it was based on...
Yeah, he wrote it during the McCarthy...
Right, exactly.
Boy, this building is really shaking right now. Did you feel that, Jim?
No, I didn't. I guess in my
shaking.
Location, I didn't.
They're shooting fireworks out there.
Hmm.
At least I hope they are.
I don't know. It could be that nuclear war you were just prophesying.
Well,
in that
think
case,
it was
I'll
that.
Stay right here.
Yeah.
I hope you're in the basement or something.
We're somewhere. Where are we? I don't know where we are, but we're away from the rest of the world, that's for sure. Well, thanks for calling. Let's get some other calls.
Thank you.
Sorry, 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hold on, please.
Hold on, please? Mm. The guy calls us, puts us on hold.
Are we about to get some... exciting offer. Have you ever gotten one of those things where you pick up the phone?
I have machines calling me all the time.
Right, exactly.
And,
you know, so
if you want information on this, talk after I finish speaking.
Right.
And hear the beep, you know? And I always tell them, I've made a note of what your product is, and I am not going to buy it.
Right.
I'm going to tell all my friends not to buy it, because I don't like getting phone calls like this.
Now, no, I can't blame you.
Is the person there?
Hello?
Ah, there's a person
Hi.
Here. Can we help you? Apparently not. No, they're gone. They hung up. What do you think of that, Jim?
I don't know,
what
but
do you think of that.
I don't know, but the thing about
indicative of the way people are today.
They just don't care.
They just don't care.
They start out, but then they start out for the election, for the voting booth, and they don't make it there.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. What is going on here?
Extraordinary.
No one's talking to us.
Calling but not speaking.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. How you doing?
Okay. So far, how are you?
Yeah, I'd just like to call up, you know, you're talking about the election and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'd like to say I'm probably as disgusted as you are with the choice of candidates.
Well, I don't want to say that's good, but it's, I think it's something we need to hear from more people.
Yeah, it's really amazing that the two people who are running for president, you know, really lack any sort of qualities, you know, that we would say we would want our leaders to have. You know, neither of them impress me as someone worthy to lead the greatest country in the world.
Well, can you think of someone, a world leader anywhere, that you are impressed with?
Well, I'll tell you who impresses me is, if Gorbachev, you know, if he ever loses his job, you know, we should tell him to come over here.
Well, the man's got charisma, I'll say that.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. He beats us in the public relations department all the time.
But look at what's happening over there.
Right.
I mean, he's introduced glasnost and everything, but look at all the problems now in Lithuania and in the Baltic republics and in Yugoslavia.
Yeah,
all this nationalism.
He inherited those problems, you know, because...
But they didn't... They were kind of stifled for a long time under the communist rule, and now they're being encouraged to come out, and you see talk of Serbian nationalism again, which is what started World War I. So I'm beginning to wonder here, what are we getting ourselves into? You know?
Well, you see, something like that is bound to happen because, you know, like all empires, sooner or later the subject peoples will rise up against you. It can only go on so long. That's been proven. Just about all empires are like that.
Uh-huh.
But You know, one thing, you guys were mentioning nuclear weapons before, and you know, like you said, that is what started World War One. Is, you know, like Austria-Hungary and all that.
Right.
Because they had a similar situation where they were dominating, you know, a whole bunch of different ethnic groups, you know. But I can say one thing. I think nuclear weapons were good, and that, they've probably prevented a major war from happening in the past 40 years because they've raised the consequences so high that no one would really dare risk, you know.
Yeah, but how long do you think you can count on people being so afraid of something that they won't use it?
I think a long time because, you know, because the, you know, the stakes are so high that the use of those weapons could literally destroy you as well as who you use them against.
Tell me something, sir. Do you know any gamblers? Do you know any poker players?
Yes,
you know,
yes, I do.
Then you must know something about what happens to you after a while. You lose your sense of reason no matter what the stakes are.
But not with these, because you will be destroyed yourself. The only type of person who would do that
would be someone who is suicidal, and I don't doubt there are suicidal people in power.
I don't know. You know, the system would tend to keep maniacs like that out. You know, you have like...
How about fundamentalists? You know, they believe that the world will end and everybody that they like will go to heaven.
Oh, those people are crazy. But
yeah, but those people have a lot of power.
And, you know, here and Russia would tend to keep someone as illogical as that from being in a position where they would have the use of those weapons.
Well, now, a lot of Reagan's friends are just those kind of people. People like Falwell and many others who I probably don't even know.
But, you know, their support, you know, it isn't the whole country. They have their base, but, you know, like, look at Robertson, you know. He was running, you know, he got some votes early on in certain states, but, you know, the rest of the country, you know, they didn't choose him because they knew that so many people would be alienated by that, you know, they would really never have a guy like that there, you know, barring, say, like a major disaster, like an economic disaster or something where, you know, that would appeal to certain people, you know. But otherwise, I really can't see that.
Uh-huh.
I know, I'm not for nuclear weapons, but I'm saying, you know, there are, like, different sides of it, you know.
Yeah, I've heard the other sides of the argument and everything. I just, you know, I remain unconvinced. That's the only thing.
I mean, the fact is that they're not going to go away. You know, at this right now in time, and really for the foreseeable future, they're going to be around, and we have to accept that and try to make the world safer in, you know, other ways. You know, reduce them, yes, but I really can't see everybody putting them away right now. Maybe in the future, yeah, that would be great, but, you know, for
well,
the next
we have to
years,
start. It's going to take a while to do, but I think we have to start the process now, you know.
Yeah.
And, that's something that is inevitable. I mean, they really don't have a choice. We can't keep doing this.
But, yeah, eventually, yes, but for now, you know, we really have to, you know, keep our defenses up in some ways.
Okay.
Not saying that we'd be, you know, provocative, you know, and aggressive, but we do have to keep our, you know, defenses up. And I'm not a Republican, you know, I'm not a Democrat either, but that is an important thing.
Well, you know, I wish more people would say that they're not either one, you know, that they're just, they believe in what they themselves believe in, and they're not going to just accept what's fed to them by a certain party.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the whole premise of this country, I think, is to be independent and free thinking.
But, you know, like they said, our Wall Street, you know, would go down with taxes and stuff. I mean, taxes, they are pretty outrageous, you know. I mean, they take nearly a quarter of what I earn in taxes. And, it's not like, you know, I mean, that's a quarter. Now, in a place like England, they take half your taxes, but, you know, you get many benefits for that. You know, there's free medicine and all that over there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, you know, they take a quarter of my taxes and,
most of it goes right into making those nuclear weapons.
Now, I tell you, it's not really a nuclear weapon. It's the maintenance of the conventional forces, which is really the most expensive thing in their budget.
Well, when you're the world protector, there's a lot of maintenance going on.
That's true, but unfortunately, we were put there as the protector of the world after the Second World War. We were the only people standing in between, you know, the wreck of Europe and the Russians. And, you know, that's why we're there. Yeah, you know, we have to be there. We had to, at any rate. We still do. Don't you think that?
Well, maybe so, but, I mean, we have to realize it can't go on forever.
No, we can't, but that doesn't take, you know, it can't happen just by us alone. You know, we really have to reduce these tensions over there, and those tensions are caused by the Soviet occupation of Eastern Europe. You have to admit that.
That's one of the factors. That's one of the factors, but you can't deny that our presence in Central America helps any, or our support of South Africa, or all the other things that we do that are kind of nasty.
Yeah, but you know that's because we're forced into it. We have to do these things sometimes. You know, I don't agree with South Africa at all, but to tell you the truth, there's really nothing we can do.
We can just pull out, say, to hell with you people.
I know, but that's what I'm trying to say, is that if we pull out, it doesn't matter. They can hold up all by themselves. There's enough people willing to do business with them without the United States. Look, the French, the Swedes, neutral Sweden, and they're like one of
it
the
won't
biggest
be enough.
Backers of human rights.
It won't be enough. They would fall apart without our support.
They've shown it. We've pulled out all our companies there. And they've just taken it over and run it themselves. And not only that, we have to buy chromium from them because they're pretty much the world's largest producer of chromium.
We froze Iranian assets. Why? Because we call them a terrorist nation. Now, I think we can call South Africa pretty much a terrorist nation based on the way they treat their own citizens. And if we froze their assets in this country and did those kind of things, you'd see a definite change. Whether you'd see the government crumble and something else take its place, or just concessions,
we
would see a change.
Their assets here, and they would still survive.
Well, it wouldn't be pleasant at all, and I think they'd want to bargain on that point.
Now, what I'm trying to say, you know, as an ideal, yes, you know, I'm against them, but what I'm trying to say is that they're very intransigent down there. They feel that they're backed into a corner and surrounded, pretty much like Israel is with the Arabs. They're not going to give up.
Uh-huh.
They aren't. You know, this is, you
well,
know,
that's the problem then, because it's precisely that. It's the stubbornness of South Africa, of Israel, the stubbornness of the situation in Northern Ireland. That's why these things never change.
But,
someone,
you know,
has to do something. Someone has to talk a little bit differently, you know. And
I'm trying to say that by us totally, you know, by us totally cutting our ties with them, we're not going to change anything. We're going to cut ourselves off from them because they can deal without us. They'll hold up. They don't need us over there. They don't. You know, they're an industrial state. We need their chrome. We can't get it from anywhere else. That's where it all is, and we need that. And don't you think that if we have some sort of connections there, that we have a better chance to influence, you know, what goes on?
I'd like to think that, but it just hasn't happened. And I don't think it's going to happen with Reagan clones in the White House.
With better pressure on them that way?
Like I said, it just has not happened yet. And that's precisely what we've been doing.
Sooner or later it will. And the thing will it be a bloody war? Or, you know, will you know, they'd be able to manage it so that it goes nice and so that it goes well. And
well, I think all this talk about we have to avoid a bloody war at all costs is kind of hypocritical because we don't seem to mind bloody wars in countries that we want to take over, like Nicaragua.
No, but certain, you know, Nicaragua, you know, it's the same that, you know, we should have done something years ago when that came down. You know, for years we supported Somoza, who was a brutal tyrant.
Uh-huh.
You know, we installed them there in 1911. You know, we sent the Marines down, you know, because there was some trouble down there, and we set them up, you know, as our puppets. And they've ruled that place, the Somoza family and whoever else is involved, and they ruled for so long, and, you know, they were as bad as the communists are now. Communists are bad down there, just like the other guys. The thing is, why didn't we try to do something in 1979 when this all happened? How come we just sat and let it happen?
Well, because the same reason that people vote on party lines, because a certain doctrine has to be subscribed to. We only support rightist regimes. We cannot support a leftist regime, much like a Republican would only vote Republican and would never vote Democrat. It's the same kind of principle at work there, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay, well, we're going to go to some more calls then.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Are you going to another call?
Well, yeah, we got a few.
Oh, all right.
We have a few waiting there.
All right.
Thanks for calling, though.
Bye-bye.
632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. Oh, boy. A lot of silence tonight. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
It's your turn.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
fuck you.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
There are so many people hanging up, so.
Yeah? Are you going to be one of them?
No.
Go ahead.
I found something here that's kind of interesting. As well, and it's funny, too. All right, it's called 1987 Year in Review.
Uh-huh.
All right, just listen to this for a second, okay?
Okay, just for a second.
All right, well, more than a second. Perhaps a little bit longer. Okay?
Go ahead.
All right, January 3rd, Oral Roberts tells his followers that unless they send him $4.5 million by the end of the month, God will turn him into a hypocritical money-grubbing slime bag.
I heard that before.
January 5th, you heard this thing?
I heard words to that effect. Go ahead.
All right, January 5th, in response to growing pressure from the United States, the government of Colombia vows to track down its major drug dealers and, if necessary, remove them from the cabinet.
Uh-huh.
This isn't all true, by the way. So don't...
This isn't all true?
Not all of it.
Then what business do you have reading it to us?
It's based on...
We want the truth.
No. It's based on fact, but it's a little, expanded. Put it that way. All right, the FAA announced that in response to routine questionnaires, 63% of the nation's air traffic controllers stated that their primary career goal was to defeat the forces of the planet Wambino. In the ongoing war against the federal deficit, the Reagan administration submits the first-ever trillion-dollar budget. People's Republic of China announces that Deng Xiaoping means big stud artichoke. The Audi Corporation is forced to recall 250,000 cars after repeated incidents wherein parked Audis, apparently acting on their own, used their mobile phones to purchase stocks on margin.
Fascinating.
Yeah. In the Middle East, Syria has its name legally changed to Jordan. A welcome calm settles over Beirut as the six remaining civilians are taken hostage. In Washington, the IRS reveals the new, improved W-4 form, which is such a big hit that the experts who thought it up are immediately put to work on developing a policy for the Persian Gulf. On the ongoing war against the federal deficit, Congress gives itself a pay raise.
You have one more.
One more, okay.
So pick the best one.
In the widening scandal on Wall Street, the heads of three major investment firms robbed a liquor store.
Fine. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Oh, yeah.
Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello, yes, I'm calling about the nuclear weapon problem.
Yeah?
Yes, I call you very once in a while, like monthly.
Uh-huh.
I like your show. You have some very rude people tonight.
Well, you know, we cater to rude people.
Oh, well, anyway, the nuclear system, like that young man said, it is a deterrent. It's an evil deterrent, just as a gun in a policeman's holster is. It is not good to have a gun, but someone has to have the gun.
Uh-huh.
If you can see the logic in that.
Not really.
Well, no one can, but that's the way it is. Do you understand?
No one can see the logic in it, but that's the way it is.
There is no logic in it.
Okay, I can see that.
That is the way that it has to be. Someone is always going to have the gun. And if you are in a society, when walking on the street, wouldn't you want to be the one with the gun?
Not really, because I don't trust myself.
You don't trust yourself?
No.
You would go out and shoot women and children?
Well, you know, I don't know. I've never walked down the street with a gun in my hand. One never knows, you know?
Oh, I don't carry the gun neither.
Well, then don't.
The fact that someone has to have the gun, it has to be put in responsible people's hands. And one person I would not give a gun to, because he doesn't want one anyway, is this Michael Dukakis.
Well, I don't think Michael Dukakis is asking for a gun. I think he's asking for a vote.
Asking for a vote, and then he has his finger on the trigger.
The finger on the button, not the trigger.
Oh, the button. Okay.
Oh, no, I've pressed plenty of buttons in my time. It's different from a gun.
Sitting in
a tank. But I see your point.
He was riding in a tank. He's crazy.
Uh-huh.
He don't know anything. He was making fun of this man, Quell. What service was Michael Dukakis in?
I don't know.
What the branch of the service?
I have no idea.
They didn't even bring it up. He was probably in the Eagle Scouts.
Oh, boy.
I don't like him. I don't like Bush neither. Nobody does.
So who are you going to vote for?
I am going to vote... I'll have to write in my cousin.
Well, I admire the fact that you're at least, that the gentleman is at least bothering to go to the polls. and vote in some way. I think that is a valid action to take.
You must vote. Everyone must vote.
I agree with you 100%.
I think. But you know something?
Yes.
People do not know that. They think that they vote. A friend of mine voted once, and he thinks he's still registered. You must register. It's
absolutely.
Too late now.
Absolutely.
Too late now.
I think you have to, in Suffolk County anyway, I think if you haven't voted in 2 years, you have to re-register. I think that's what the law is. But you're absolutely right. You have to keep track.
What about the public flogging? Isn't that...
that only a local law?
The public flogging
the public
is, I think.
Flogging?
Well, if you don't register in 2 years.
Well, I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, well, you should be. It's very embarrassing, not to mention painful. Yeah, it's a new... The Suffolk County Legislature, they're known for their far-reaching... laws, you know, that the rest of the country follows on.
I hadn't
this
seen
is something to increase
about that.
Voter registration in the county. Yes.
I suspect that certainly will increase it.
The problem is where do the public floggings take place?
And with what are you flogged?
I don't think that's a problem. I think several people have stepped forward with contributions there.
You mean have stepped forward to be flogged? Or
no,
to
no,
do the flogging?
To use their material to flog people with.
Nice. What kind of material?
What are you talking about? You're off on the tangent.
Yeah, I forgot he was there.
I'm sorry.
Well, sir,
we're
going off on a tangent, and I'm sorry, but we can't take the phone with us.
No, okay. Well, I will talk to you again.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. Good night.
It's 11 minutes after 11 o'clock, and this is WUSB in Stony Brook. And I'm going to try to kind of steer onto another highway here. One thing that I promised I would do, promised myself I would do, was to give a little bit of time to... a person who passed away this week. You may, if you listened to Pacifica News on Thursday, you would have heard a mention made of a reporter that died last weekend. His name is Michael McBride, and he worked over at WBAI, and we've aired many of his pieces on this radio station. I'll just read what was in the New York Times. It's kind of sad because this person was probably one of the best reporters on the whole Pacifica network. And there isn't even an article about him in the Times. It's just one of those little obituary things in the tiny print. But what they say in this little piece is rather nice, I think. Michael F. McBride, who lived in Summit, New Jersey, and New York City, died on Saturday, October 15th, at age 35. He was an actor, journalist, and housing activist. Trained in theater at Catholic University in Washington, D.C., and at Circle in the Square Theater in New York City. From 1976 to 1986, he appeared on television, in regional theater, on tour, and on Broadway. At the time of his death, he worked as a news reporter and anchor at WBAI-FM in New York City. As coordinator of listener action, he directed the station's coverage of housing and homelessness issues. Through his news reporting and editorial coverage, he became an important spokesperson for New York City's homeless. He is survived by his parents, two brothers, and three sisters. Services were held today in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and they ask in lieu of flowers, contributions be made to Pacifica Foundation Listener Action for the Homeless. That's care of WBAI-FM, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York. And he will be dearly missed by his friends and family. And I worked with Michael quite a bit in the city and for Pacifica. And yeah, he was one of those people that you just you could see going on to bigger and better things. He had kind of that network quality to him. You could just see him working for, you know, a big news bureau in the future. And it's just it's so strange. Jim, I don't know if you're still with us.
Yes.
It's just strange when you see... we talked about this a little bit last week because someone else, last week a local person, had been killed in a bicycle accident right on Nichols Road. And we see this happen to some guy who's only 35 years old who just goes suddenly like this in the prime of his life and leading a very productive life. And I'll tell you, it really puts things into perspective. You realize just how petty... most of the things you're involved in are the differences you have with people that you come in daily contact with, the things that you waste your time doing, and the things that you don't do, the things that you never get around to doing. It all kind of it throws it at you very quickly, and it's scary, you know.
It is.
They said this at first. They thought it was a heart attack that Michael McBride died of, and of course that gets you scared just thinking about that. A person that had no previous heart problems, as far as I knew. Now they're saying they believe it was a cerebral hemorrhage, which is even more frightening to most people, because from what I'm told, that can just happen at any time to anybody. And as far as ways of going, I guess it's probably one of the best, because you don't feel anything and it's instant. So you never know what hit you, but still, it's it makes you think, you know, how much time am I wasting, and what am I really getting out of life, you know? And
it makes you feel out of control in a way, or having less control over your destiny than you think you do.
We have very little control, and a lot of what we live is an illusion. We just assume it's all going to stay in place. Now, we're playing by some kind of game rule that we're given, you know. The sky is blue, and there's gravity, and people look the way they do. We don't ask why. There's no way we can ask why. That's just the way it is. But something we forget a lot is that it just can stop, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
And unfortunately, in this case, we're all going to be a bit poorer for it, because he did quite a few good stories on the homeless. I didn't know he was actually a spokesman for the homeless. He was very involved, and he is definitely going to be missed. You know, that sounds like kind of a plastic phrase, but it is true.
I'm sure you mean it, especially having worked with him.
Yeah. So
very sorry to hear that.
It's something, you know, that seems to be happening quite a bit recently with young people too, and I just hope it stops now, and we get something added to our lives. I'm learning about all this.
Yeah, I think what you said about taking certain assumptions or taking things for granted, I think in some ways it's important to be able to take some of those things for granted, so that if an individual is constantly assuming that life is random as chaos, or as chaos, and at any given moment the order of things can just come in his own or her own life can be completely dissipated, it might make the person so fearful that they are afraid to do anything that they consider meaningful with their lives. But I think it has to be tempered, those assumptions have to be tempered with the awareness, at least in the back of the mind, that at any moment something can go completely haywire, so that people can feel impelled to try and find some meaning in their life.
Yeah, it's... it can be very scary with that realization,
yes.
But I think, you know, the initial realization is the scary part. After you become resigned to that fact, I think, you know, you can live with it. Literally.
Yes, I agree. I agree. As long as you don't let it overtake you, you know, with tremendous constant fear, I think that
right.
I think you're 100% correct.
When you think, no matter, you know, no matter who important, I mean, no matter how important, can't even talk anymore, no matter how important the person is, the same fate is going to await everybody in the end. So
that's right.
Everything that happens here is not meaningless, but if you're put down by somebody or made to feel like you're less of a person, it's simply not true.
I agree. That's very well put. I think that puts the whole thing into perspective right there.
So that's kind of the philosophical thoughts that have been going through my mind in the last week or so. But what we're going to do is we're going to... come back with an entirely new topic, so all these people on the phones might want to reconsider whether they want to stay there. We have something of interest to discuss, and Jim, I think you're going to find this particularly interesting. So we'll be back right after this rather intriguing music. Kind of how it sounds outside. Well, it's not really raining outside, is it? No, it's not raining outside, but. It might, you know, because it's traditional. When we have our fall festival here at the university, it summons up the rain demons. And in this case, almost summon up the snow demons. And we'll be back right after this piece. The next song crept in there a little bit, but we're not going to play that. We heard from 1970, the song Black Sabbath from the band of the same name, and what some people might consider a classic, and rightfully so. Here on WUSB in Stony Brook, the program is Brain Damage, and time for us to lapse into our brand new topic. Out of love for Satan and death. The moon just out hung over the Ozarks like a pale opal that night of December 6, 1987. Soon, families would be saying grace over Sunday dinner. Children would be clamoring to turn on the Christmas lights. It was time to go home. But in the darkening woods, four teenagers lingered, enjoying the rush they always felt when they killed something. A kitten lay crumpled nearby. The boys were growing edgy. Suddenly, Jim Hardy heard a voice issue the command, "Do it now." Jim felt his baseball bat smash into Stephen Newberry's face and saw Steve's eyes widen in terror as he cried out, staggered, then turned to run. The others gave chase, sneakers scrabbling madly through the dead leaves. Steve was big and slow. He wheeled around to face his friends as they closed in. "Why me, you guys?" he begged. "Why me?" Backing away, he tripped, and as he fell, he heard a familiar laugh and the answer to his question, "Because it's fun, Steve." Knowing as they do now how brutal and pointless the murder of Stephen Newberry was, the people in this Missouri town, Carl Junction, are filled with grief, but there is guilt as well, for his death really was foreseeable. It took the police less than a day to follow the whispers that led to Jim Hardy, Pete Rowland, and Ron Clements, who admitted they had clubbed Steve to death with baseball bats, tied a 200-pound boulder to his body, and dumped him in a well. They did it, they said, partly out of curiosity. They wondered what it would feel like to kill someone. But they also did it out of devotion, to prove their faith in Satan. He was a human sacrifice. "Everybody is guilty," said Penny Baird, a few days before her son, Pete Rowland, began serving time for first-degree murder. "Everybody is hurt. Everybody feels responsible. You feel like there's just some small thing you should have done that would have changed everything, and you don't know what it is." And now, after two trials this year, all three boys are serving life sentences without parole at the federal penitentiary in Jefferson City, Missouri. Ron Clements was convicted in April and Pete Rowland in June. And to avoid execution, Jim Hardy decided to accept a plea bargain, which his comrades had declined. He's serving the same sentence. All three turned 18 in prison. And the people of Jasper County blame the heavy drugs, the violent music, the forbidden books, the gory movies. Then they blame themselves for unwittingly watching three 17-year-olds slip over the edge. Clues have been mounting for years. Interviews, police records, public and confidential documents, trial testimony, and confessions tell the story. Many trace the trouble to the day 5 years ago when James Hardy, an accountant, moved his family from Joplin to Carl Junction, a sleepy suburb near the Kansas border. He and his wife, Nancy, and their five children lived in a split level surrounded by tiny woods and verdant fields. Jimmy, the second oldest, had been an altar boy, an honor student, before his grades and behavior took a sudden tumble when he was 11. When the nuns at his parish suggested professional help, Jim sulked through a few sessions at Ozark Mental Health Center in Joplin before his parents gave up. Nancy and James Hardy were separating, and they assumed the family turmoil triggered Jim's outbursts. But no one guessed the truth. Jim Hardy was a drug abuser and a sadist. He had been popping pills since sixth grade. He had been mutilating animals even longer. And at 13, Jim began getting careless about hiding these things. When his father questioned his marijuana use, Jim smashed a baseball bat into his bedroom door. Tension between them peaked one day when James Hardy, puttering in the garage, griped about his son's misplacing a tool. Jim stormed cursing into the side yard, grabbed a heavy log, and screamed at his father, "I'm going to kill you." He heaved the log against the side of the house and picked up another. This one shattered the sliding glass door. Remembering this rage brings tears to Jim's eyes now, tears he does not shed when he talks about what he did to Steve Newberry. On at least three previous occasions, the three boys had planned to kill Newberry, but either their victim made himself unavailable or they lost their nerve. Newberry's mother said her son became afraid when he found that a member of Jim Hardy's crowd had made a drawing that appeared to show him being mutilated. His mother told him to stay away from those boys. He didn't listen. Steve Newberry was one of the first to befriend Jim when he entered Carl Junction Junior High. But it was Ron Clements, son of a waitress and a drifting drug addict, who became his closest ally. Ron and Jim Hardy forged a blood brother friendship based on heavy metal music, drugs, and eventually, Satan. Each blames the other for instigating what became an obsession with the occult. First it was all talk, then they began poring over library books on witchcraft and Satanism. They repeated chants to summon a demon. They drew pentagrams and other symbols, first on notepaper, later on buildings. They mimicked the horned hand greeting of their favorite heavy metal stars. When the bus driver caught Jim preaching Satanism to younger children, the school sent a note home, and it came back with Nancy Hardy's signature. It didn't change a thing. I would kind of just pray to God and Satan at the same time to see who was more powerful. And little by little, I fell out of God and started falling into Satan, Jim Hardy said. You can't just dabble. It sucks you in real quick. In response, Jim thought, Satan gave him more of what he wanted most, drugs and friends. Ron was praying, too, splaying himself in an upside-down cross on his bed. Believing in Satan could give you so much power, Ron would say, that you could kill someone with the blink of an eye. He and Jim agreed that Satan ruled the world. As sophomores, they became cockier about their newfound religion. Each pierced an ear and wore an inverted cross. By now, Jim and Ron were mainstays in the stoner crowd, kids who went into the woods near Carl Junction High to sneak a few joints. In class, they were the zombies or the smart alecks. They often spent Saturday mornings in detention and Saturday nights partying in public parks. Their favorite bands were heavy metal groups with names like Megadeth and Slayer. The songs had lyrics that told of seances and black masses, of torture and destruction, of Satan and of sacrifice. Jim and Ron talked about such things constantly, and classmates either laughed or walked away in disgust. Murder intrigued them, as did sadistic fantasies. Satan is my lord, Jim would proclaim. But in truth, Ron was starting to get scared. In his 15th year, he began to believe that demons were trying to possess him. He was drifting off to sleep one night when his head began to throb, the pain pounding against his eyes like a jackhammer. I felt like there was someone inside my head, but I couldn't understand what they were saying, he told friends and later psychiatrists. Ron was dropping out of the Satanism thing. Jim was sympathetic. He thought he had been possessed himself half a dozen times, but Ron's declaration had little effect. He still partied and thrashed his head to the music. In detention hall, he filled out a school worksheet with satanic pentagrams. It didn't take Ron long to discover a replacement for Satan. He rented the movie A Clockwork Orange in his junior year, and then borrowed the book, permanently, from a friend. The story of teenage sociopaths in the futuristic London excited Ron. He read it over and over, turning in a book report about getting lost in a novel and becoming a player. Before long, he was affecting the Cockney accent and vocabulary of the novel's anti-hero, 15-year-old Alex. Alex is my new name, and Ron is my forsaken name, Ron declared in his secret journal. All entries thereafter were signed Alex. In a careful feminine hand, Alex filled the pages with some of the most savage lyrics in the heavy metal movement. Now Ron claimed he could make out the words of the strange voice inside his head. Watch out, it urged. Kill someone. He wondered if it was Alex and consulted a psychology test for symptoms of insanity. To school officials, he was a hostile, lazy underachiever
who clearly had psychological problems. Teachers sent him to the office regularly. Raymond Dickens, principal of Carl Junction High, wondered why the boy didn't just drop out. Trying to discipline the stoners was futile. When Jim Hardy was suspended indefinitely for smoking, leaving campus, and other infractions, his mother read Dickens' The Riot Act, and Jim was back the next day. Denial was a standard parental reaction, Dickens found. If you say you suspect the kid's on drugs, some parents threaten to sue you. Diana Clements didn't deny that her son Ron had serious problems, but the officials, rather professionals, she turned to apparently did. In April 1987, she took Roy to the Ozark Mental Health Center for counseling. Without testing him, the center told her it wasn't necessary to admit Ron to the Drug and Alcohol Rehabilitation Unit, though Ron himself told counselors Randy Groens that he wanted to get sober. Groens doubted Ron's sincerity. Ron also confided to Groens that he was consumed by morbid thoughts and fantasies, like kicking or beating people. Groens later said in a pre-trial deposition that he didn't consider this atypical with fantasy work in adolescence. Ozark's interview also recorded Ron's fear that he was demonically possessed, as well as his interest in Satan worship and the occult. This revelation was never explored any further. When Ron went to spend that summer with his father in Arizona, Diana Clements went snooping in her son's room. Ghastly heavy metal posters were plastered all over the walls. Black cloth covered the windows. A stuffed wolf's head hung from the ceiling. Diana came across Ron's journal. The graphic violence and sex fantasies were so alarming that she asked a friend at the police department what to do. The officer told her Ron needed help, so she took the journal back to the Ozark Center. For growing speed metal so loud, fast, and dissonant that it often takes 30 or 40 playings just to make out any lyrics. Ron Clements and Jim Hardy listened for hours at a time and learned the words by heart. These songs fed a raw hunger that had gnawed at Jim since he was small. I was fascinated by death, he recalled. I always had this obsession with killing things. I don't know really what it was. Like when I started out as a little kid, I couldn't just shoot a bird and watch it die. I had to tear it up. I just thought it was neat. I just wanted to see the death. I was infatuated by the death. When he was a little boy, Jim loved to explore the woods behind his house, a hiding place where he could satisfy his urge to kill. But as Jim grew more popular, death was no longer a secret indulgence. One new friend, Pete Rowland, shared his compulsion. Pete's lawyers later would blame this in part on an abused childhood. Pete was a strapping athlete whose wavy black hair and pale blue eyes earned him first place in the school's most photogenic contest. The buddies with whom Jim and Pete got high would join the slaughter now and then, or just watch, and the other kids would hear about it at school. Jim would pull a little group around him at lunch and entertain them, and they loved listening to him, said Ray Dickens. Over sack lunches and cafeteria trays, a half dozen or so regulars would listen to Jim talk about torture, apparently never guessing some of the animals were their own missing pets. Friends remember sitting in Jim's bedroom and laughing as they watched him drive screws through a Barbie doll's head, then burn the plastic face and wish out loud it was human. Pete, Ron, and a few others would add their ugliest thoughts. What would happen if you poured gasoline on an old lady and set her on fire, they speculated. People would just trip on it, Jim said. They thought I was joking. But in my mind, that was exactly what I wanted to do. Maybe it was all the drugs and the suggestive music while I was on drugs. But it was also the evil force growing inside me. There was something definitely inside me. Something was changing in Pete. And Penny Baird was worried. But her son insisted the gory images and satanic symbols on his t-shirts didn't mean a thing. In his room, Penny came across crude weapons, broken glass, a stick with nails poking out. A poster on Pete's wall showed a singer drinking blood from a human skull. When she found a satanic Bible in Pete's room, he explained that it belonged to someone else. After that, it disappeared. While Ron was away in Arizona, Jim and Pete grew closer. Joined occasionally by other boys in the party crowd, among them Stephen Newberry, they tortured animals to death so many times they lost count. Sometimes there were three or four a day. Pete and Jim even made up a ditty about their hobby, and each particular
savage episode would merit a verse. Sacrifice those babies to Satan, the chorus went. One day, Jim and Pete burned a fluffy little dog alive inside an abandoned dryer they had stuffed with weeds and sprinkled with paint thinner. That dog was running around inside, and it's the first time I ever heard a dog scream, Jim said. It sounded just like a human screaming. We just started laughing, he added. That was like a game to us. See how long we could make them live. So we just stabbed it a few times and chucked it off into the weeds. He denies the animals were ritual sacrifices. Pete reported that he had heard voices instructing him to do evil, and that he would return to the places where he and Jim butchered the animals to worship the remains. In exchange for a human sacrifice, Pete believed Satan would reward him with supernatural powers. Dr. William Logan, the Menninger Foundation Director of Law and Psychiatry, hired as an expert and witness for Pete's defense, diagnosed Pete as having a psychotic disorder induced by drugs, heavy metal, and Jim Hardy. But Hardy came up with this diagnosis. It's like, I guess, something inside me slipped out and grabbed onto Pete. In fact, Jim had become a big man on campus now, and he attributed his newfound popularity to Satan because I was growing in him. It wasn't that Jim fit in as that he stood out. His bleached hair grazed his shoulders, and he wore shredded heavy metal T-shirts. When student council elections came up, the stoners decided to make crazy old Jim Hardy the most powerful kid on campus. What a joke, Jim laughed at first. But being president of the 600-member student body held an appeal. Jim announced his candidacy, but his landslide victory still amazes him. They just thought I had a demented mind, but they didn't care. They liked me no matter what. Everybody knew Jim was a rebel, recalled a girl in the junior class who supported him. Everybody thought it would be cool. The teachers would just freak. Nancy Hardy was probably the only person who took Jim's campaign seriously. She regarded it as a sign that Jimmy was straightening up at last. Relations with his father were improving, and so were Jim's grades. He started talking about college and even curbed his drug use. Ray Dickens, the principal, considered Jim Hardy a con artist and a professional liar. Let them elect him, he figured, and live with the consequences. He never guessed that one of the consequences would be engraving Stephen Newberry's name on the bronze bulldog memorial plaque out front, honoring students who died before graduation day. Classmates remember Jim signing their yearbooks, "In Satan's name we pray." When their senior year began in September 1987, the scene at the lunch table was much the same, but human beings began to surface more often in the gruesome what-if conversations. Many heard the new student council president declare that his life would not be complete until he had killed someone. The ultimate goal, Jim boasted, was human sacrifice. Once he even blurted it out right in front of Pete's mom, saying he wondered what it would be like to kill someone. But Penny Bayard thought Jim was just a scrawny kid acting tough. She shook her head. I know you're not that bad, Jim, she said. He just grinned. Teachers had the same response. Just crazy old Jim at it again. Jim was starting to wonder if he really was crazy. He was asking Satan for more power and began hearing what he would later describe as a voice inside his head. It told him he had to prove himself. One night, Jim became convinced that Satan was wrenching his soul from his body and was so frightened that he climbed into bed with his dismayed parents. He was 17 years old. Just watch me during the night while I sleep, he asked, and wake me up if it looks like I'm having any trouble. When one girl asked Jim if it was true he sacrificed cats, he said yes, that he liked to taste the blood because it was sweet. What about dogs, she asked. Their blood was just as good. What about humans? Haven't gotten to them yet, Jim replied. Jim now denies he ever drank blood and complains that many classmates gave false statements against him. They want in on the action, I guess, he said. The sounds of Megadeth underneath us as we read a story from today's Newsday. That's right. If you like that story, just pick up today's paper. There it is. Along with a really neat picture. Out of Love for Satan and Death, the true story of happenings in Carl Junction, Missouri. And what I'd like to spend a little time on here is just how true was it? What were the reasons for this? What causes Satanism to take hold in a teenager? Is it really Satanism? What effect does music have? What effects do drugs play in all of this? You can call us at 632-6901. Jim, any feelings?
Well, first, I would even want to look at what people think constitutes Satanism. I mean, apart from any dictionary definition, I would look at primarily look at the actions that were taken, and I'm sure that just about anybody would agree with me about this. I don't think I'm saying anything profound when I say that someone should not be killed, that a human being shouldn't be killed, animals shouldn't be killed, that these preoccupations that were carried out or that were voiced by the people involved were very distorted, bad preoccupations, unhealthy, psychotic, and that any kind of behavior that involves death, on any kind of unwarranted death, I think there are some very, very limited, let's say like self-defense instances where death can be considered justifiable, that it's a bad thing, and that whatever causes it, I think it's important to look at the causes of it, but that if people are asking about Satanism, I think, as a cause, I think that primarily, or first anyway, not just primarily, but that first of all, Satanism should be looked at as whether people are discussing some specific faith or whether it's a philosophy that people adopt as a pretext for carrying out very negative activities. I mean, I don't know if there's any specific indication that the Jim in the article, whether he would not have ended up killing somebody anyway without the influence of Satanism. Now, I'm not saying that in order to defend Satanism. I find that it's a philosophy, whatever you'd want to call it, it's completely odious to me. But what I'm asking is whether people who have... I'd say this boy, well, he's technically legally a man now, but when he was a boy, from the time he was very young...
There are three people, actually quite a few people involved in this.
Right, I'd say any number of these people, some of them may initially have had very psychotic tendencies, others may have just gone along. Now, and then ended up doing what one could call, what I would call evil things. But see, I would consider many things evil whether or not they have the cause of Satanism, or whether or not somebody is a proponent of Satanism. If they do bad things, they're bad, they're being bad. And the reason why I'm bringing all this up is I know that the issue comes up about music that is called satanic or that makes references to Satanism, and personally it's not music that I generally tend to listen to, but that in itself, I of course, doesn't mean that it should be banned, but I'm sure that the question is now raised, would any of these deaths or any of these incidents involving what I'm sure we would all agree would be evil. I'm sure that most of us would agree that the things that were done were evil. The question, I think, is how can tendencies like this be reversed and how can acts like this be prevented? And then the question is going to come up, I'm sure, at one point or another, not just amongst us here, but in general, if let's say this story gets further and further publicity, it'll probably bring forth new calls from some sectors to ban certain kinds of lyrics. which raises a whole other issue in my mind of whether or not somebody likes the music or the lyrics.
It's we have to see just how much power is held within lyrics. Thanks, Jim. We're gonna talk to Joe.
Yes,
now.
Sure.
Well, you said that these are tendencies, whether that perhaps if they're evil, they should be something that should be reversed. That is not something which I would say is altogether possible, because these are very natural tendencies. Now, hold on before you say it's natural to kill people. What we're talking here about is not so much, I think, Satanism, because Satan is just a concept of, you know, of one sort. Well, I guess some people say he's very real. But we're talking about the feeling that no one likes to feel helpless. Everyone likes to feel like they have some kind of power, and this is an issue that becomes especially important, I think, in adolescence, and in a very overt ways in adolescent males. But this leads to like sort of a very fertile fantasy world. I'm speaking partly from experience, of course. You know, when you're growing up, you're living in a world where it doesn't seem you have much control over anything. It's an adult's world. And so anything which you can do which somehow makes you feel more effective or powerful is very attractive. You know, you listen to the music and you get all excited, you know, and you jump around, you feel more powerful. You know, you talk about Satan killing people, you imagine that you'll get these supernatural powers. All of this it's the product of fantasy and imagination, but it's leading to feeling that you're somehow effective and powerful in the world. And the problem here is primarily that these people were so involved and seemed to have no recourse in terms of family or other friends to help them realize that there were ways to feel good about yourself other than going out and hacking up kittens, you know.
How would you have reached them? Can these people be reached?
Well, that's a very good question. Obviously, you can't say, well, you're psychotic, we're sending you to the psychologist because, you know, they're going to say, oh, right, you know, they'll feel put upon and more... it'll just increase their feeling that they're being pushed under somehow.
Well, these people went to psychiatrists, they went to mental health clinics, didn't help.
Of course,
they didn't stop anything.
They don't feel like they're mentally ill, you know, they're going to sit there and listen to the doctor and say, you know, this is a bunch of, can't say it on the air.
But the doctors didn't think they were mentally ill either.
Well, maybe...
Except they're normal, aggressive teenagers.
That's why some of the individuals, I don't think, were mentally balanced, and I think maybe that their cases weren't dug deeply enough. And I agree with you when you talk about finding ways to make people good about themselves and finding ways to make young people feel that they have some control over their lives through more positive outlets. And I agree about that there are tendencies for people to be violent. When I say reverse tendencies, I'm glad you brought that up. So I can clarify that. I mean to try and get into a better balance that will not lead to mutilation or death, etc. The tendencies of a human being. In other words, there are positive tendencies and negative tendencies, and that's why I think that outright banning of lyrics is a dangerous precedent. Because I think the alternative is to provide additional. Maybe for the want of a better word, I'll say stimuli, make it available so that young people feel, and when I say make it available, I don't mean, I mean through means that make the positive stimuli seem as attractive at least as the negative stimuli, and as glamorous at least, so to speak, as a negative stimuli, and as powerful at least as a negative stimuli, so that they can have a choice. And it doesn't guarantee that they'll choose the more positive stimuli, but I think that when something is banned, granted, in certain instances it may not take hold of certain people, but on the other hand, it may become that much more attractive to certain people, and may, in fact, end up reaching even more people by its very forbidden nature, who will really go out of their way to seek it out.
It's true. If you were to ban something like this, it would just make it more glamorous in a way. They wouldn't feel that it was being banned because it was bad. They would feel it was being banned because it was something good, and you didn't want them to get their hands on it.
Right. Another thing that's being held beyond their reach till they're 21, which to even a 16-year-old can seem an eternity, let alone to a 12- or 13-year-old, understandably, even a psychological perception of time to a young person.
I'd like to read a lyric from from one of the records that that I guess is held responsible for this kind of thing from Megadeth, So Far, So Good, So What album. This is called Mary Jane. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I'm a child of the air, I'm a witch of the wind, and I'm still wide awake, Mary Jane. From the earth up through the trees, I can hear her calling me. Her voice rides on the breeze. Oh, it's haunting me. No, I can't get away. No, there's no escape. If I know I'm going crazy, I must not be insane. Beware, my friends, as you pass by. As you are now, so once was I. As I am now, so you must be. Prepare, my friends, to follow me. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I'm a child of the air, a witch of the wind. Fingers gripped around my brain. No control. My mind is lame. I'm in the astral plane, and I'll never be the same. And he says never about 10 times. It hurts so bad I can't breathe. Prepare to follow me. Now, should we ban that song, or what?
No, it wouldn't make much sense at all. Also, if you ban something like this, say you could somehow manage to get them all banned and decide exactly what was bannable and keep people from listening to it, it wouldn't make much sense anyways, because, again, it's not so much specifically what they're talking about. There will always be these outlets for negative feelings.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And if it's hidden, it's I guess it's more dangerous. And if it's out in the open, at least we can discuss it like we're discussing it tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas if this didn't exist, we wouldn't be able to talk about it. It would be something so hidden that we wouldn't be able to figure it out at all.
Mm-hmm. That's very well be. I agree. I think that that there's always. Well, they're not always, I don't know if I could say that, but there certainly seems to be nowadays, and has been for a long time, what are generally agreed upon by most people to be good things and evil things. And simply banning a manifestation or an expression of evil things do not make the evil things go away. And
yeah.
In fact, although I don't like some of the lyrics that I hear, as I said, I am not supposed to be someone that peremptorily decide to ban something because I don't like it, but some of the things may be, I may even find legitimate expressions in terms of the intention of the lyricist, legitimate expressions of a certain sentiment that might not even relate to Satanism specifically or to evil specifically, but may be used instead as a metaphor, those lyrics, for some concept that the lyricist, in perfectly good faith, is expressing. There may be other lyricists that are proponents of Satan, and I personally, again, as I said, find that completely odious.
Or if not completely silly.
Or, yes, and possibly very, very silly. And I don't like the idea of Satanism personally because it is a manifestation of evil things, and I like to try to avoid evil things. I'm not a paragon of virtue, but I'm just saying that that's just a personal feeling, but that's not going to... But ripping it up and throwing it away, so to speak, won't make the thing that creates the lyrics go away.
I think you hit the nail on the head, though, the manifestation of something evil as opposed to something evil itself.
Right.
Yes, we ban the evil things. We ban murder and torture and the horrible things that went on here, but as far as something that can be interpreted in many different ways, or even something that blatantly says horrible things, it's words.
That's right.
And when you start banning words, it leads to banning other things. It's a stepping
stone. That's right.
I mean, if we banned Megadeth based on the song I read just now, Mary Jane, we'd be banning this song too, called Set the World Afire. Red flash clouds choking out the morning sky. They said it would never come. We knew it was a lie. All forms of life die now. The humans all succumb. Time to kiss your ass goodbye. The end has just begun. Distorted figures walk the street. It's 1989. Weeds once underneath your feet have grown to vines. Bodies melted like a candle. A land without a face. No time to change your fate. No time left. It's too late. The arsenal of Megadeth can't be rid, they said. And if it comes, the living will envy the dead. Racing for power and all come in last. No winning first stone cast. This falsehood worldly peace. Its treaties soon will cease. No one will be left to prove that humans existed. Maybe soon the children will be born open-fisted. We all live on one planet. It will all go up in smoke. Too bad they couldn't see this lethal energy. And now the final scene, a global darkening. Dig deep, the piles of rubble and ruins towering overhead both far and wide. There's unknown tools for World War III. Einstein said we'll use rocks on the other side. No survivors set the world afire. And I kind of like that.
Yeah, and I think that that's a warning against bad things happening, but I think you're right that under the definition of, I'm sure, of certain proposals to ban certain lyrics, that would get thrown out as well. As a matter of fact, there are some ordinances that have been proposed in certain localities and or for certain localities and maybe even passed at some point that would be the way the wording of it was, even though it wasn't the intention of it, would have banned certain passages of the Bible because the Bible refers to violence and evil, but that doesn't mean that the Bible is an evil document. In the same way, I think the set of lyrics you just read are not evil lyrics. They're making references to evil as a warning against what could happen, against evil things happening. And also, if an artist, a lyricist, expresses very grotesque things, or even if people aren't artists for a living but just seek to express themselves through expressing grotesque things, maybe that's a better outlet than if they're banned from even expressing themselves, and then they may go out and do evil things because they don't have the catharsis of expression, the generally normal human experience of expression. So I think that all of these things that you read there, Eric, and I'm sure that most people would find it difficult not to be moved by the account that you just read, to feel how horrendous this the whole situation was. I think that more evil would be done by just outright banning than by looking more closely at the causes of the evil.
I'm going to be like Ted Koppel here for a second and say to our affiliated stations down the line that we will be running over tonight on Brain Damage. So station managers, all the affiliates across the world, keep that in mind.
I'm finished, so yeah, well, I didn't want to take up any more
time.
Let's
take a couple of calls now. 632-6901, if you have any feelings on the matter. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yeah?
Yeah. Now, I am a big heavy metal fanatic.
Uh-huh.
And I think people who take the lyrics so seriously are totally stupid, because you got to be naive to take them that seriously, you're going to kill somebody.
Uh-huh. So you're a heavy metal fan, but you don't take the lyrics seriously.
No, it's heavy. Heavy metal is loud. It's very aggressive. There's a way to let off some steam.
Uh-huh.
But you don't go guys far just to beat somebody over the head just because of somebody. Megadeth or a Slayer or Metallica tells you to.
Well, now let me ask you, do you think friends of yours, people that you know that also listen to this music, do they have your attitude, or do you think there's people out there, other people out there that are actually taking these lyrics seriously and are pretending or not pretending to be devil worshippers? Do you think that's a serious problem? Is it a problem at all?
Well, most of my friends are all level-headed, and so they get into the music very heavily, so do I, but we won't go that far to pentagrams on our heads and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
It just goes to show that if you want people want to do something as stupid as deciding what you can and cannot listen to, when in fact everyone out there, or at least enough people, are fairly intelligent enough to make their own decisions, and not you know, because the music is aggressive, go out and you know hit people.
Yeah, heavy metal is supposed to be fun. It's just music, you know. You're supposed to enjoy it. I might kill somebody over it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think I think the people that claim to kill people based on the music would have killed people for some other reason.
Yeah,
at some point.
It's like some bodies, like a couple of times, a couple of kids just had hung themselves across. He said, listen to a suicide solution, and that just points to his stupidity. I think he isn't telling them how to kill themselves, you know. It's just his music, you know. I don't think that route to suggest that killing just is good, because I've met a couple of metal bands, such as the Slayer, and they're nothing like that at all. You know, they just write head of music. You know? They don't expect you to act like assholes, you know.
Thank you very much for calling. Our number is 632-6901. I think you touched upon an important point, though, by saying it's only music. And that's what it is. It's only music.
And it is supposed to be fun. I mean, if you're going to lose control of yourself, you're going to lose control of yourself. But the music is something which most people listen to because they enjoy it and they have a good time, not because they think hacking people up is a wonderful idea.
I do think, though, it would be a good idea for the people in these bands to kind of at times say, you know, guys, it's not cool to go around, you know, chopping up cats and things like that. I don't think that would be asking too much to just, you know, have them say things like that now and then if it seems to be a problem with their fans.
In the interest of good PR alone,
definitely.
If not, and to prevent it being misused,
Our number is 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello, this is the Radio Parasite Arnold, and I was just wondering...
Are we supposed to know you?
No, but first off, you have a new producer?
A new producer?
Yes.
Why do you ask?
The format of the show seems to have been changed.
Well, right. I'll level with you. The format of the entire station has changed. We were sold to... we're not allowed to say who we were sold to, are we?
Well, it was to Yale University. I have
yeah, we're not an affiliate of Yale. But nonetheless, what other changes have you noticed?
Well, you know, you used to just have open phones, but now it's, you know, a topic that you have to call in about.
Not always. Sometimes we just have open phones. No, we change all the time. The format of this show, the format of this station has always been not to have a format.
Or a slogan. No offense, but you used to just... You know, anybody could call up and talk, but for the last, I've been on hold for an hour.
No, you have not been on hold. You've been ringing for an hour. Yeah. There's a big difference because when you're on hold for an hour, you have to pay for that.
That's true. Well,
okay.
But that's still one good point about it.
So you haven't paid a cent for being on perpetual ringing, so don't worry about it.
Well, I know. You're a dick.
Wasted your time.
Dick.
No, that's not my name. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Oh, Eric. Oh, hi.
Hello.
Oh, it's Jim.
Jim.
Yeah, how you doing?
How you doing? I figured I'd hear your voice before long.
Oh, you got a good subject going tonight, eh?
Oh, it's a fun subject. It's taking us into overtime. You might even say sudden death overtime.
Yeah.
Based on what these people say.
Stations talked about this subject a lot, though. I think New Dimensions even covered it slightly, or considered the alternative.
I'll tell you, it's a big subject because it's actually a reality that these kind of lyrics, these kind of records could be rated or banned. Maybe it's the same thing, rating something that's the next step towards banning it. The PMRC still is around. They haven't gone anyplace. Maybe we haven't heard anything from them in the last few weeks, but they are still around, and I don't doubt that they're stronger than ever. So it's an ongoing topic, and with the FCC regulations and everything that seem to get more stringent every week.
Really? I haven't been following it. I thought the Newsday article brought this up.
Brought what up?
This subject tonight.
Well, the Newsday article was what motivated this topic, yes. But it's an ongoing subject.
That's not the subject tonight.
What's not the...
I was interested in that article. When I read that, You gotta understand what I'm saying when I say this. Again, not take this the wrong way, because this can be taken the wrong way.
Well, go ahead and throw it our way.
More respect for these kids had they not. They were doing things that they said that they were in the name of Satan, but I would not. I would say that they were just stupid, crazy kids. Everybody would say that. But what, when they said human sacrifice, but that wasn't really what they were doing. They were just crazy.
Well, I mean, how much of a brain do you need to be able to say things like human sacrifice and ritual killings and torturing small animals?
That
doesn't make you a creature of Satan. That makes you just a twisted person.
Satan's name. You see, they're using that. I think that's like a cop-out. There are certain tribes in this world, like headhunters, for instance. Headhunters don't hunt heads as some kind of malicious thing. They do it to release a spirit. It has something to do with their religion. And there are certain tribes, I'm not exactly sure what Indian it is. I think my facts could be backed up by the book, The Power of Myth by Joseph.
Well, okay, now let me ask you this. You think that the music with these lyrics, do you think that could be equated to a kind of religion in itself?
I think that some of the stuff is, in my opinion, is sick. But you know that, yeah. When I was younger, I was listening to Black Sabbath, and I used to really like it. But I never ran around. At least I don't think I did. I never wanted to kill any animals or torture anything. I never wanted to do any of that. You know, but maybe it's getting a little bit out of hand. Well, I don't know, but maybe that's what my parents would have said about the music I listened to back then. Oh, well, you know, this is really getting out of hand here. Listen to these lyrics.
Well, as far as I can remember, every generation has had to deal with this. They wanted to ban jazz when that first came out because that incited people to do all kinds of crazy things. Chuck Berry and the Beatles, don't forget them.
But the lyrics are getting out there. But, you know, that, I would never, you know, censorship, you know, I don't want any of that stuff censored.
We're still just talking about words, though. So the words are obscene to us, but the actions and words are obscene to all the older generations whenever the new generation comes up with something different.
Yeah.
It always seems to be a threat. But
And you can't just go around making a decision. I mean, no one can make a decision about what other people should or should not find offensive. I mean, what if I decide I find it offensive politicians talking about collecting nuclear weapons to go kill a whole other nation? You know, I could say, well, that's obscene and that's violent.
That's
I don't
right.
want to hear about it.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but the article that provoked this, I think that as far as those kids were concerned, they weren't really into Satanism. It was just their. Because I don't really think they knew anything about Satan or anything. Not that I do.
Well, it sounded like they were doing their research. They had a satanic Bible, and they had...
it's
possible to learn these things.
I looked that over. No, I don't remember seeing any of this. You know, I was never into any of this stuff. It's just good to have an open mind and look to see what it's about.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and like I said, there's groups of people in this world... there's this Indians. I don't know exactly what tribe, where they're from, but the object was if they won this game, they would be the one that would die, and that would be like a sacrifice, and they would, to win would be, you would be the one that would die, but they would welcome that. You see, these sacrifices are different than the ones you're seeing in a news day. Like, in our society, that would be sick. But
well, it's based on a completely different set of values.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different. The values of the Mideast are completely different from our values, the values of the Far East.
Yeah.
It just keeps going on and on. Yes, there's different
maybe
values.
Maybe this Satan thing that they're talking about, it just doesn't fit in with our society. Maybe they need their own ritual. But I wouldn't give, you know, those kids are crazy, you know.
Uh-huh.
I'm not just saying what they do. There's anything right about it.
But now, a lot of, you know, there were a couple of crazy kids in the situation in Carl Junction, Missouri, but they were the most popular kids in the school. How do we rationalize that? People knew what they were doing with animals,
yeah,
and they didn't bother them.
This is Newsday, and I've known Newsday to twist the facts, you know.
Well, actually, this came from the Los Angeles Times, and was reprinted in Newsday.
Oh, really?
But, I mean, I'm sure the Los Angeles Times is just as capable of twisting facts.
I think it's plausible.
Could be sensationalized too, for all I know.
Don't you ever sense a kind of mob frenzy sometimes when it comes to things like this, where something that's obviously wrong is embraced? I mean, we've seen it in history so many times.
What do you mean? I'm missing the point.
Well, the point is that these kids, while they were the ones that did the actual killing, there was a whole school full of people that knew what these kids were like.
That's true. You know, well, I didn't really try to stop them. I'm reading the article, and all the while I'm thinking, well, gee, these kids are taking little cats and they're setting them on fire. Doesn't anybody object to this? You know, I'm like, what kind of neighborhood do these people live in? Because, like, I couldn't do that. That's crazy.
But let me ask you something.
Definitely. And they say they're into Satanism.
That
to me isn't what Satanism was all about.
But Jim, let me ask you one thing. Now, you say that, you know, what kind of people would just take these stories about mutilating kittens and things. But have you always spoken out against what is wrong even when you're outnumbered? Have you always said this is wrong when everyone else says it's okay?
Take this radio station, for instance. How many people do I know listen to this radio station? Do you know how hard it is to stand up for USB and PK?
Well, it's a lot easier to listen to a radio station than it is to stand up to a mob of teenagers and say, you know, you're doing terrible things here, you know, or a mob of anybody, not just teenagers.
There's a lot of peer pressure, that was associated with this statement.
And that's exactly what this is here, is peer pressure, perverted peer pressure, but having the three P's there. But have you ever battled peer pressure and survived? It's a very hard thing to battle.
Well, Eric, don't get carried away.
What could I have possibly done that where I could have stepped in? Let's see.
Well, you know, Eric, if somebody's standing up for this.
In other words, where there was a lot of, you got a good point, but I mean, why do you think that if anybody would have spoke out, that they were afraid for their own well-being? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, I mean, you know, everyone likes to fit in, and obviously, what was missing from this whole story is somebody speaking up and saying this is wrong. I mean, even their parents thought something was wrong with their kids, but they didn't think it was quite this bad. No one really pieced the whole puzzle together, you know.
Well, I tried
kids
to
that like to murder small creatures and
myself, like just speaking out. I said, so let me see. I'm in high school and I'm walking in the halls with friends I know, and then maybe one of those guys walk by, and then somebody says, oh, there goes one of those guys who burns the cats and sticks the dogs and the dryers and you know, sticks screwdrivers in their head or something, you know. Don't you think the rumor would get around? You know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The rumor did get around. It was a fact. Everybody knew about it, and it didn't seem to bother them.
I have a good question about that. I mean, you got a good point about what would I say?
I just think it touches upon a weakness in our society where we're not encouraged to stand up to injustice enough on an individual level.
All right, I live in Central Iceland. All right, if I go into Carlton Park to visit a friend of mine, I'll have about 10 people approach the car. And no exaggeration, you could drive through it tonight and you'll find out. People will walk out in front of your car and they'll ask if you want to buy crack. Did I get out of my car and say, look, I don't want you to sell crack. Knock it off right now. I would love to do that. But how long, you know, I have to live in this neighborhood and have to live with these people. What am I going to do? I could be a vigilante. That's about it.
Well, you can't single-handedly solve the problem, no.
No, you're not certain.
I would equate that with what you said. There's certain things I can do, there's certain things I can't do, there's certain things I would like to do. I would like to stop that, but what...
Well, now, I think there's a slight difference because, you know, someone who knew about this could have approached someone who didn't know about this that might have had the power to step in and perhaps save this poor kid from being killed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but
you saw the mother, somebody tried to get the kid out of school.
they tried to get the kid...
Oh, you're not going to do this to my son.
Right, they tried to get the kid out of school because he was cutting classes and smoking pot. That's not the same thing as maiming animals. You know, and that just was not focused upon enough until after
That's
it was
right.
too late.
That's
maybe
right.
They couldn't prove that he was maiming. You know, maybe it was just too much hearsay. I think it'd be hard to believe, but you definitely have a good point. Would somebody speak out? Well, what if me and you were in school and we did speak out? What would we do then?
Well, yeah, it's actually a very good point because once something like that in a school environment became popular, speaking out against it would be something that would be very, very difficult. If you did speak out about it and it was somehow popular, chances are you would face the derision of the entire school you know, for being a fink or a stoolie or whatever, you know. It generally, nonconformity of that sort is very discouraged, whereas sort of a cool kind of nonconformity, in other words, doing radical weird things, you know, or, you know, drinking a whole quart of whatever.
I don't think that
is some. Well,
yeah, I think that's true.
Those things tend to be reinforced.
Definitely, but the additional part of that, I think, is that, or the extra step that might exist there is that you can conform to what's in vogue by showing admiration or getting actively involved in some of those very terrible things,
or just by not saying anything.
Right, by tacitly going along and tacitly approving of it, or you can speak out against it. Or the third alternative that I would think is, without saying anything, one can avoid the people and not elect people to be president of the student council. He was elected to their office, wasn't he?
Landslide victory.
If word did get around to most of the students of what he was doing, most of those students could have said, no, I'm not going to elect somebody that puts puppies in dryers and listens to them scream and gets something out of that. That could be a very subtle, in a way, a very subtle message to those who are actively involved in those kinds of murderous type of activities, that maybe no one will speak out against you, but maybe people will just start avoiding you, and you won't be that popular a person. But there again comes the question of what makes. I can see that it's plausible as to what makes people find that so popular that even if they don't become directly involved, they want to be around or seem to show some approval, even if it's tacit approval, for that notorious person. Because what he's doing, maybe most of the people who gave the impression they admired what he did or wanted to seem like they weren't really putting down what he did and wanted to seem in vogue with him, only heard these things in the abstract. They didn't actually see the puppy or hear the puppy screaming in the dryer or watch the kitten burning on fire. But these things represented, because they were by prima facie disapproved of by the older generation, they were an effective outlet of rebellion for what is a normal rebellion a normal instinct of rebellion in teenagers. I'm not saying it's normal for them to want to put puppies in dryers or burn cats. I'm not making fun of that. I'm just saying that there's this normal instinct, natural instinct. I mean, rebellion might even be too negative a word. It's the instinct of gaining a certain amount of a sense of self-sufficiency and a sense of independence, self-assertiveness, which are by nature certainly not bad things, and overall are good things, because they, in the whole continuum of human evolution and of the whole meaning of the universe, continue the whole propagation of the human race, and by extension of everything. I mean, humans aren't the only things that are important, obviously, in evolution and in the universe. But the question is, what could be made available in terms of image and in terms of actual things to kids, where they can have a more healthy outlet for their rebellion? And I'm not talking in some hackneyed way about setting up knock hockey community centers, although there's nothing wrong with that either. It's just that I'm not talking about things that are thought of as a quick fix, but in a more basic sense, what can be made available to teenagers so that they don't fall by this kind of wayside?
Yeah, but this is just one extreme.
Jim, we're going to go to some more calls, but thanks for calling.
Hey, good night.
Okay, 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Brain Damage. You're giving a lot of people brain damage. Well, this is the know-all, see-all, do-all of radio, Mr. Radio.
Mr. Radio, it's been a good few months since you called. I mean, a good few months. What have you been up to?
Oh, about 6-1.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, so what's new?
Okay, I mean, first of all, I must address a few issues here on the Brain Damage program. First of all, that conversation went on very too long. I mean, too much. I mean, this is disgusting, talking about putting your little puppy dogs and kitty cats in, you know, in dryers and washers and dryers. This is a sick marijuana plotted subject.
Well,
I mean, somebody must be smoking pot down there at the studio.
It's the subject of the night, so...
That borders on slander, Mr. Radio. Because I don't know of no one that's smoking pot up here.
This is open phone Long Island, isn't it?
Yes, but I'm just saying... I didn't say it is slanderous. I didn't say we're going to cut you up. I'm saying that borders on slander. I think you're making a faulty assumption.
Oh, excuse me. My apologies to the air staff.
Yeah, you're generalizing. Just because there's a program called Brain Damage and we all sound kind of crazy doesn't mean that we're all on drugs.
Okay, is this open phones?
What do you mean, is it open phones?
Talking about any subject?
We're talking about this right now, and if you talk about something else, I guarantee you'll lose all interest in the subject that we've been talking about for the last... however long we've been talking about it.
What's a stupid subject? It doesn't affect anybody on Long Island.
It affected some people in Northport not long ago in a very direct way.
We're talking about stuff that's way down south, has nothing to do with today, Long Island. Let's go.
Nothing to do with us, huh?
Except that teenage rebellion is something which affects everyone under the age of 20.
Oh, yes. Come on.
And a lot of people over the age of 22.
It's a Saturday night, and you people...
No, it's Sunday morning.
It's a Sunday morning, a Saturday night / Sunday morning. You people are sitting here talking about stupid subjects. Let's talk about something that's controversial. Let's talk about Morton Downey. Let's talk
that's
about...
All.
Why don't you put Morton Downey on and watch him? I mean, or how many other radio stations are in this area that are offering different things? If you don't like what you hear here, I mean, again, you have a right to say that it's stupid, but why are you aggravating yourself so much about what we're doing here?
I mean, this should be open phone, a nice...
why should it be? But why
program.
Should... What I want to know is, why should it be open phone?
Because, I mean, well, I pay for this radio station. I'm a donator. I send $10 every year to the programming staff.
That's wonderful.
I haven't seen a penny of that. Where's it been? Who's pocketing that?
It bought the new coffee machine. Okay.
You don't have a coffee machine.
Well, let me just talk here for 15 minutes about something I want to talk about.
No chance. We can't talk for 15 minutes.
Morton Downey, there's no controversy there.
Okay, have you ever heard of a guy named Stillskin who calls your station?
Yes,
occasionally,
I think so.
Yes. What about him?
Okay, Stillskin, how you doing out there? He got me addicted to your show. So he's a good friend of mine.
You were calling our show almost a year ago when we started.
Yeah, but I know, but Stillskin got me back into your groove, because he calls another station called WICC, a talk show.
Don't start on this again. I don't want to hear about it.
Wait a minute. You've heard about the show?
I don't want to talk about it.
What?
I don't want to talk about it.
Dave Fita?
That's it. That word will get you cut off. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yes, first of all, I'd like to say to Mr. Radio to get a life. It's a Saturday night. Go out and do something else besides call the radio station.
Yeah, for the sake of all of us, yes. But let's not get a war started here because we don't, you know, waste so much time. Where are you calling from, sir?
Central Islip.
Central Islip. Same place Jim was calling
you
from.
You can wave to Jim.
Wave to Jim, yes. Now, do you have any feelings on this satanic music business?
Well, first of all, I listen to thrash and I listen to metal music. I go to a college out here. I'm the student government president. But
at Stony Brook?
No.
Oh. Well, what college is that?
New York Tech.
New York Tech. Okay.
I just like to say, you know, the metalheads, a lot of people, you know, they just take it too far. They go into something that they don't understand. For example, let's say people rebel and Satanism is against the establishment, so people take it so far as to delve into something they don't understand. I know Joe, from what I hear, might not agree because he doesn't seem to believe in maybe in concepts of the devil, but I know many people have used the Ouija board and things like that, and they do work, so there's some other force, supernatural force out there, I believe.
They do work, or the people that use them believe they work?
No, I've used them. I don't use it anymore. And I've introduced people to them, and I don't move them. And those people don't move them because they don't know what's going on. And I mean, if you believe in God, you got to believe in an anti-God. I mean,
okay.
Maybe,
well, let's say that that neither one of you did move the board, and the board spelled something out. are you saying that that means that there's a god and an anti-god?
No.
Couldn't it just be some extraterrestrial playing around and having fun with us?
It's a possibility.
There's an infinite universe here.
But if an extraterrestrial is watching everything everybody does and is trying to play around, is controlling the whole planet, then why can't you say extraterrestrials aren't controlling what we say right now?
Well, is it even possible in terms of the Ouija board, and I'm not saying that it definitely is, but that it could be a very mundane explanation where both people don't think that they're moving the piece that's on the board. They are touching it very lightly, and they're convinced, because they want very badly to believe that it will move on its own, that they unconsciously convince themselves that they aren't putting enough pressure on it to move it, but that they're just over the threshold of enough pressure to move it, but not over the threshold of perceiving that they're applying enough pressure.
Have you ever used one?
Yes, I have.
You know, actually, I have to agree with Mr. Radio here for a minute that we are getting off into kind of a tangent subject here. We're talking about Ouija boards.
Well, no, in a way this relates because it's one step in that direction, I guess you could say, you know.
Because I'm just saying, if you ever used one, they move a little bit faster than just like in 2 years, it spells out something maybe. And,
it is intriguing. I'll grant you that.
To go on, I just think that, I just wanted to put in that input. Everybody keeps on hinting at psychoanalytical problems in people's heads. That can be the case in some cases, but I'm saying that in some cases people just get into something because it's rebellious, and they think, oh, wow, all the Catholics, all the Protestants, everybody's going to go out there and say, oh, that's terrible, and they like that reaction.
Yeah. Oh, sure,
and,
I agree.
They just get involved in something that they have no control over, they don't understand.
But I think that that has roots, when it gets out of control, that has roots that can be approached through psychoanalysis or through a psychological analysis of the situation, and people can be helped through psychological therapy or psychoanalysis.
Some people, there's still a lot of mental institutions with people that are incurably insane.
That's true, and it's regrettable that people have to be confined, and it could be argued effectively that there are some people who are unfairly confined, but I'm just suggesting that, I'm not saying that everybody just has to be thrown into an institution and locked up. What I'm saying is that there might very well be spiritual forces that most people don't completely perceive, but I still think that people's behavior can be, if it's negative behavior or pathological, can be helped through logic and through psychoanalysis, and I don't think it's inconsistent with, I don't think that spiritual forces and logical forces and mental forces the ethereal and the mundane are necessarily incompatible with one another.
I'd like to know, how do you prove that someone is incurably insane? You know, at what point do you say you're incurably, I can't even say it myself, How do you tell someone they're insane?
I don't know that a psychiatrist would necessarily. I think he would agree with you, Eric. I think most psychiatrists, I suspect, would probably say that you should never give up hope. I think that's why psychiatry probably proves fascinating to people that go into it, because they not only feel fulfilled at being able to help people, but feel intrigued by very difficult cases and hope that if they keep working away that they'll be able to help the person.
But at the same time, I've known a few psychiatrists that have absolutely no sense of an altered state of mind, no sense of humor even. If you say something that you meant as a joke, they take it seriously. And, that means that you have these feelings about this, you know, and it's not what it meant at all. It's very hard for someone to get inside your head and interpret things.
Well, I will say this, that I think you're correct that on a conscious level, that what a psychiatrist may say in response to a joke that you make is not accurate as far as what you consciously meant. But what the psychiatrist is probably doing is, through his the discipline of his training, is able to make a probably an accurate statement about what your statement may imply in terms of the state of your unconscious, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there's something wrong with your unconscious. And I think that it's only when a person's actions, regardless of the source of those actions, when a person's actions become harmful to himself or others, then I think it's time for a value judgment. But if someone just makes a joke or makes a statement and doesn't mean anything by it, I mean, there's a lot of, I think, theory in psychoanalysis that, or I think in particularly, I think Freud thought that jokes very often represent hostility of some kind. And this may very well be true, that there may be people who joke who unconsciously are very hostile, but that doesn't make them by nature evil people or by nature hostile people in terms of their overt actions. It just may be an indicator of what's going on underneath their consciousness. I think it's the conscious acts that are really the fundamental means of judging whether a person is a harm to himself or other people are, or is not a harm. And I think that's the basis on which people end up being confined.
Let me ask our caller, do you listen to a lot of heavy metal yourself?
Yes, I do.
Uh-huh. And has it rubbed off on you?
No, as a matter of fact, there's something I wanted to mention that I forgot when you were starting to talk about your show. Heavy metal, to me, is like an outlet for, like, I first started listening to hard rock, heavy metal, as soon as I, like, if I'd get mad or upset about something, I'd listen to it, and it would, like, ease the rage. It's like an outlet. Instead of making you more mad and more going crazy, it's an outlet to anger. Instead of going out and beating the shit out of someone, you listen to heavy metal music, and it's like an outlet. It's like they had. It's like there's anger in the music, and it sort of dissipates.
I think that's a very valid point.
To me, it does that for me. I don't know about other people,
mm-hmm.
but I'd like to say something about psychology. You're saying using psychology is like a stable science, and I've taken a few psychology courses, and as of today, as of 1988, we don't know that much about the mind, and there are like five or six theories, as is physics now is a stable science until we get to very abstract nuclear particles, as one proven theory. There's like five or six unproven, not sure of theories. There's theories that have been proven, five or six of them. Psychology is like branches. People are Freudian, or people go to other branches of psychology. It's not a stable science. People don't know a lot about the brain as of now, and that's why there are so many people that are in mental institutions, because they don't understand, they don't know how to help these people.
I think you're right, but I just think that it's better than nothing, is really
yeah,
all I'm saying.
But I'm just...
But you're correct, sure.
We don't know much about spiritualism, and
no.
and you're saying you don't know if it exists, but we don't know much about the mind either. It's a very complex thing that we've just been learning about in the past 20 years or
sure.
so.
Sure. Oh, I don't deny that...
The last World War.
Oh, I don't deny that that there could be very well be a spiritual dimension. I tend actually to believe that there is. I couldn't prove it outright, but I tend to believe it. But I'm just saying that it doesn't have to be, that a spiritual approach to something does not have to exclude let's put it this way, the soul and the mind can be addressed at the same time, and sometimes using different methods. That's all I'm saying.
Because if a guy in the newspaper says there was something pulling at his mind and he wanted to go out and things were telling him to kill people, either I don't think the music made him crazy, but either I say he's going for a plea of insanity and get out of it, or and he's lying through his teeth, or maybe something was pulling at his mind.
It may have been, and that's why I think that what's important, or paramount importance, is to find out one way or the other what it is that makes certain people behave in such a way that the pressures that they are exposed to push them past a certain point that has been defined, that either seems obvious or is defined legally as being not good. And that sounds like a very weak kind of phrase to use, but I think that puts it best. I mean, in other words, it's not good to kill, it's not good to mutilate, it's not good to hurt, and whatever the reason why somebody does those things, I think it's important to find out what motivates them to, and to try and prevent things from motivating people from acting that way, and to find out in this specific instance where peer pressure, which is a very normal phenomenon can be subverted. But I don't think that, I guess you would agree with me, that banning lyrics specifically addresses that.
What if it's proven that the lyrics are what motivate the people?
That's a very good question. I guess if there was some way to prove that it's the lyrics themselves that are doing that, then there's a very important constitutional issue that's raised, because then, to me, the next issue that comes up will more people be hurt and killed by banning the lyrics, those specific lyrics, which could then lead to other lyrics being banned or other words in general, other forms of expression in general being banned? Will more people be harmed by that action than by not banning the lyrics, but accepting that the lyrics may cause harm, but to try and counteract that harm through other means that do not create a very fundamental constitutional crisis, a banning of free speech, which can lead to other crises in and of itself.
All right, we're going to move on. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay.
632-6901, area code 516. Let's see if we can get a bingo. Let's get some callers from over sound in Connecticut, area code 516-632-6901. If you're calling from on campus here at the State University at Stony Brook, you only have to dial 26901, which saves you quite a bit of time. And you're listening to Brain Damage here on WUSB in Stony Brook. I'm Eric Corley, along with Jim Weiner and Joe Chinaki. We're talking all about satanic cults, heavy metal music, and things like that, how they're connected, whether censorship is in order, and all that kind of stuff. 632-6901. Give us a call. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
I am outraged. First of all, that last caller used filthy language and was not bleeped from the airwaves. I think some censorship should be incorporated into the show, because when someone says a dirty word, which was one of the seven dirty words, I believe, I think that caller should be hung up immediately. I don't think it should be spurring on the airwaves. I think it's there could be some young 16-year-old people listening out there, and I think this is disgusting.
Do you remember the word you said last time you called up? That was the last word you said?
Oh, well, I'm not going to even mention that. No, I don't think any radio station should allow dirty words to go over the airwaves. I think this is a semi-communistic view on programming you're having right now, allowing dirty words over the airwaves.
Well, the communists do it all the time. We all know that.
Yes.
Do you have any kind of a other point, sir?
Well, do you remember Steve Springfield? I just want to say, Mr. Radio is Steve Springfield for the people out there in Radioland who are wondering. Yes, Steve Springfield is / Mr. Radio, and I'm gonna take over this show.
You have to do it from your house. 632-6901.
Question is, whose show is he going to take over?
I don't know. Maybe the show of force that we all have to come up with now. 632-6901. I want to see some calls here. This is a topic that can that will affect everybody.
Perhaps some calls from communists out there who can tell us how much they really would like to hear obscenity.
I'd like to hear from communists. I'd also like to hear from people who are really into this kind of music and you know, whose parents worry about them and whose schools won't let them in the door, and does it motivate you to do these horrible things? And if so, we'd like to hear from those people too, to know what you know, to see if we can figure it all out.
What I went in line with that, Eric, I wonder how many people who are heavy metal fans mostly listen, not because they're paying that much attention to the lyrics to begin with, but in general are interested in the music, like the sound of the music, and just enjoy the performance of the groups. And I wonder if I would not be surprised. I know I can't say this for a sure thing, but I would not be surprised if most heavy metal fans like listening to the music, and even if they are enjoying the lyrics, as one of the previous callers said, maybe doing it just as a very healthy outlet to express themselves by listening, or to feel a certain empathy with the hard driving expression of the music, that it helps them feel a certain relief from pressures that they face, but that they have no notion whatsoever of going out and carrying out any kind of satanic or other evil activities. They're not even really thinking about it, let alone doing it. I would suspect that most people listen to the music and the lyrics because it represents a certain amount of this normal rebellion, and because they like the sound of it. It attracts them. The beat attracts them. And it sounds like obvious things to say, but I think they listen. Most people probably listen to it for the same reason that people in previous generations have listened to other forms of music. There are things about the music that attract them, very non-evil things.
Does that scare you, Jim?
Well, no. Not at all, as a matter of fact.
I'd just like to monitor you as we go through this and see just how it affects you.
Oh, okay, fine.
You turn into a screaming maniac.
I think I see some horns growing. I think the headphones are going to interfere with
that. Now, so play it safe. This is instrumental. There's no lyrics in this one.
Thank goodness.
If you recall,
I don't feel my heart fluttering yet.
The preacher we played a few weeks ago said that the music alone can do it to you. The music will send you straight to hell.
Well, this isn't sending me to hell. It just sounds like some very assertive music, expressing a lot of conflict and turmoil and chaos. And I like the sound of it that way. That's my interpretation of it. But I don't feel any urge to run out and create chaos or conflict or do evil things to people. But you know something?
When you played the Beethoven 7th before in the classical show,
yes.
I was in my car,
yes.
And I suddenly found myself driving faster. I don't know. I don't know what it was.
Well, that's why you
see the third movement there.
But you see, that's why, if you notice, Beethoven wrote, and many classical composers wrote symphonies that had both fast and slow movements, because even though they didn't have motor vehicles at that time, they were afraid that the horses and the buggies would go faster after people came out of a Beethoven concert.
Uh-huh.
If they didn't have heavy metal concerts in those days, they had like heavy velvet concerts.
It's Stravinsky concerts later on.
Right, yeah. Exactly. and so they wanted to play slow movements so people would calm down also. But, you know, this raises another issue that's somewhat related to the previous topic, that it's like bridges the two topics. Everybody's complaining about, will somebody raise taxes? I want to know if somebody's going to raise taxes. Because I'm concerned that there's going to be a mandatory increase in the minimum number of saxophones in dance bands. And this has me concerned. I'll tell you that. That's one thing that this music brings out in me, a lot of political, musical concern.
We're all going to have to shout because this music is kind of loud.
Well, it does all relate to the problem of sax and violins on TV and in concert halls, you know.
Sure does. This, incidentally, is Megadeth, in case anyone out there is wondering, just, you know, what animals they should kill, or whatever Megadeth tells you to do. I don't know. Perhaps
you know who to blame it on, Courtney.
If someone out there knows the band that has the worst reputation for this kind of thing, please tell us what it is. We like to look at their lyrics. But maybe Megadeth is considered fairly tame in comparison. I'm not quite sure myself.
Well, you know what interests me? One of the last things that I would enjoy hearing about, but I think it was good that you read the article, as a matter of information, was what they did to those animals.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm listening to this music, and I don't feel any differently about that. In other words, I'm not only just listening to the music, but I like this music. I do. I'm serious. I like this music. I like all kinds of music.
Okay, all right.
All kinds of different music. I'm sure that most of us do. But I don't... See, what I'm saying is I think that there are a lot of people out there who both abhor cruelty to humans or animals and also like this kind of music, enjoy this kind of music. I'm sure there are a lot of heavy metal fans that have pets of their own, and they not only don't abuse the pets, they probably take very good care of their pets, like dogs or cats or whatever.
I'm going to go backwards now and see if maybe that's how you get the effect.
I understand that on one of these records, if you play it backwards, you hear the entire balance sheet of the corporation as of a certain date that manufactured one of the records, or manufactured the record.
Do you ever play labels? They're amazing.
Yeah, they are.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I'd like to talk about the music.
Go ahead.
And, the other things you guys are getting into with the kids who murdered that fella in that story you just said.
Okay.
I don't think it's the music that makes you do it. You know, of course not. You know, the music, you know, if you're a rational person, you know, the music isn't going to drive you crazy. It's not going to make you do anything like that. But I think that people who are, like, predisposed to, you know, that kind of violence would tend to listen to music like that. You know, like you said, it's aggressive, it's assertive, it has lurid lyrics. And then, you know, that's the kind of thing they would seek out, you know, to listen to. The same thing, like you said, how they rented, you know,
bloody movies. That's also their kind of entertainment, you know.
Now, do you think it ever works the other way, where the people making the music are seeking out the violent people in society?
No, I don't think the musicians are seeking that kind of audience, because, you know, there's a lot of kids, you know, who listen to that music, and they don't kill anybody. They just like it because, you know, it's loud. It's, you know, it's pretty rocking, you know, whatever they like, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I think, you know, that music does have an appeal for people who, you know, would be tended, you know, toward these sadistic kind of things.
I'll tell you this, I'd ride home on the train a lot late at night on Fridays and Saturdays, and it's, you know, there's always some kind of a concert going on at Madison Square Garden, and there's, you know, heavy metal, rap concerts, the crowds of people are always loud and boisterous, but for the most part, they, you know, they know what line not to cross, you know, and...
I'd like to bring up a point about that, too, is that, you know, I'm a music fan, I like, you know, I like some heavy metal bands and other things, but I went to a Judas Priest concert a few years ago, right? I think it was maybe 2 years ago in the summer. And I'll say the crowd was, you know, very rowdy. And at that concert, you know, there was a lot of punks. I mean, the bottles were flying at people in the parking lots. I saw fights, you know, people in the bathroom getting beat up and stuff. There's a lot of punks, you know, a couple people got hurt because, you know, fire, because M80s were thrown, you know, people down in the floor section, you know, they were hurt really bad from bombs being thrown from the upper echelons at them. People were hit by bottles, you know, there was punks starting trouble all over the place. And now last year I went to a U2 concert, which was really good, and there was none of that, you know, the crowd was boisterous, they were loud, but I saw not one bottle fly in the parking lot when I saw them. You know, I saw no fights. You know, there was no trouble there at all. And I saw the Dead a few years ago. You know, it's the same thing. You know, there was no trouble at all. No one started any sort of, you know, trouble like that.
Well, I saw the Dead a couple of days before the 4th of July this year in Maine, and people were throwing firecrackers, and some people were throwing bottles, too. So, I mean, you get bad apples in any crowd.
That's funny, though.
Certain kinds of music take the rap for it, and I don't mean that as a pun, because rap music does take a lot of abuse because of the actions that go on at those concerts. But what is, do you have any kind of a solution for that kind of thing?
No, I don't think we should ban it, but I also like to say that, you know, I think that if you're always, you know, exposed to stuff like that, you know, especially like the movies and all, if, you know, if that's what you really watch all the time, that will kind of desensitize you to violence. Maybe it won't make you kill anybody, but, you know,
that's a good point.
You know, especially somebody who's already has a weak mind or a problem with them, you know, it can make them a little worse.
That's a good point, actually. Desensitization, that's a hard word, is something which does happen. If you see enough movies with people getting their heads blown off after a while, it just doesn't seem real anymore, and it doesn't seem that bad.
Right, and especially there's so many movies where there's, like, you know, absolutely no artistic value to it at all, you know. It's just where the movie's just an excuse to, you know, mutilate people left and right and murder people, you know. Like, you know, they brought up the movie A Clockwork Orange. That's a great movie.
Yes.
Well, some people would say that's not artistic, that's just an excuse to kill people and things like that, so, I mean...
It's not, you know. Actually, you know, there's a few scenes of violence, but the most of the movie really... You know, there are, you know, some violent scenes. You know, they have to fight, they break into the house and rape the woman, all. But that doesn't go on all throughout the movie.
And if you look at it, you can see that there is some very definite structure and some very definite things are being said. It's not.
And also, you see, the violence in that movie is nothing compared to the stuff today. I mean, as far as like graphic gore and violence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the scene, you know, it's more like in your head, you know, you see the beatings and all that, but there's no blood all over the place, nobody, you know.
Well, in a sense, it's even...
a chainsaw, it's, you know, in your mind, you know, that you see that, you know, like the bum being beaten up,
Well, in a sense, it's even harsher because, for instance, since you're mentioning Clockwork Orange, the violence in that movie... And the scenes and the structure relating to it is very emotional, and in a sense, I think it's worse than any splatter film I've ever seen, because
right,
it grips you a lot
but,
more.
But you know, that it just drives the point home, you know.
Exactly.
It brings, you know, more to you. And, you know, that movie was rated X when it was released.
Mm. Yeah.
I'd say it was an anti-violence movie, certainly not trying to promote violence.
Yeah.
Right.
But that is a great movie. You know, you can watch that on a couple of different levels. You know, it's a very funny movie, too.
There's all kinds of ways of looking at it. But I think if you go into a film thinking, well, this is a film that is full of violence, and you'll miss a lot. You'll miss if there is any structure. Maybe there won't be any structure in it, but if there is...
You have to admit, you have so many of these slaughter movies. It's just...
Well, I've never seen a slaughter movie, so I don't really know what to expect.
Well,
but I'm sure I would be prejudiced if I went into one. I would, you know,
yeah, but, you
miss
know, so
any serious
movies,
value
you know,
in it.
You know, that's all there is to it. Is, you know, a whole bunch of people get murdered for something, and then what? You know, there's a, you know, and then the murderer gets killed.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You know, it's like, and they make a lot of money on these movies. Apparently, there's a big audience for them.
Well, in general, I wouldn't even say that splatter films are half as entertaining, and definitely not, well, in a way, they're not as frightening after a while, because once you've gotten used to the sight of fake blood flying all over the place, you know, there's nothing to it. It's just, which does lead to a certain amount of desensitization. But on the other hand, it just doesn't mean anything, because they sort of have a very feeble reason why this is all going on, and after that, it's just special effects.
Yeah, that's true, but I think people like that, you know, like they said, these people were violent at such an early age. You know, I think, you know, something like that could, you know...
It could tie in.
Little, just a little more. It certainly isn't the cause of it, but, you know...
In a sense, it gives them an environment where it seems to,
right.
to have a little
you
bit
know,
more free
reign. Out.
Yeah.
But as like those kids, you know, I think, you know, it's like the way they were raised or something. You know, as they said, these people were torturing cats. They were 10 years old and stuff. They were doing drugs. You know, that's the main thing, you know. Like that you were talking about that Northport thing, you know, years ago.
Uh-huh.
You know, I knew some of those people, and I knew people who hung around with them and stuff. And, you know, I was just like 2 years older than those people were. No, and I knew some of them, and, you know, those people, they were so screwed up on dope that, you know, it had to do something to your brain after a while, you know, where you're, you know, you would be, you know, where stuff like this would really, you know, get into you.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Do you think there is any more Northports or places in...
Well, sure, yeah, that's wherever there's kids, you know, something like this could happen. You know, just, there was some kid in Massachusetts, I forget what it was, killed a kid. He was all by himself, though. He beat some kid to death with a bat just to see what it's like, you know. It's not the music, it's just, I don't know, it's just like these some people just have...
Some people are loonies.
Are animals.
You know what, I just thought of something that's extremely, I don't want to say funny, but weird. When you think of the PMRC's platform, they want to go out and ban certain types of music because kids listening to that kind of music shot themselves or someone else listening to certain lyrics, certain bands, so they want to ban the music. But I never hear them saying they want to ban the gun. You know, the gun is what really did it. Why don't they ever... say anything about that? I mean, the gun really did a lot more damage than the music did. I don't think anyone can deny that.
To tell you, I'm not for banning guns, I can't say, but, you know, I think if they didn't have a gun, they would find something else.
Yeah.
I think you can't kill yourself with a bat. It would...
Brutal. People who are that brutal, it doesn't matter what kind of weapon they have.
Yes, but no matter what you say, it's a lot easier to evade something that's coming at you
right.
when it's not a bullet.
Right.
You know, if someone comes after you with a knife, they still can kill you. Yes, if someone comes after you with a bat, they still can kill you. But it's easier to get away than when someone just shoots you through the heart.
I don't know. You know, I have a gun myself. I have a shotgun. I'm not for everybody carrying around a pistol. It's very hard to get a pistol in New York State. It really is. If you outlawed pistols, this is what I would think. If you were to outlaw, what do you say, all guns or just handguns?
I'd say all guns, unless
guns.
There's a specific use for them. What's your specific use for a shotgun?
Hunting, duck hunting.
Okay.
Wouldn't you consider that a legitimate
I might concede that point.
Of course, but a shotgun can...
A home from somebody who happened to come in when you would thank God. Say you weren't there. somebody breaks into your house. You say you have a woman there who couldn't defend herself physically.
Well, now, sir, where do you keep your shotgun?
Where? She shot that guy?
Where do you keep your shotgun?
I keep it hidden in my room.
In your room?
Yes, in my room.
So it's near you at all times?
It's unloaded. I have no children in the house.
Uh-huh.
But even so, my gun is always unloaded. The breech is open. And, I never pointed at anybody, you know, even if it's not unloaded. You just have to, you know, you can't have it getting around people. If I had children in the house, I would put it somewhere where they would not be able to get at it.
Such
especially
as?
The ammunition.
Where would you put it?
I wouldn't know. I would have to see if I had kids.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can't leave something like that laying around, no. But, what I'm trying to say is, if you outlawed guns, the only people who would obey that law are law-abiding citizens. The criminals would still get guns, no matter what. The dope comes into the country, the coke. Coke is cheaper now than it was 8 years ago, and this is the war on drugs. It still comes through.
So you're saying we should give drugs to everybody then?
No, I'm not. I'm trying to say
but
that
isn't
if
that the
you
same
outlawed
argument?
Guns, it wouldn't matter. They would come through, and the crooks would still get them. People who wanted them would get them.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, but I'm looking at a situation where, in crimes of passion, where people who are not normally criminals have a pistol available, and in a moment of rage where they really don't mean to, pull the trigger, or a situation where young people get a hold of a pistol that they might have in the family, and they can conceal it easily, walk around with it, and it's a more depersonalizing action to shoot a gun and kill somebody than it is to go at them. I mean, even though these kids did use a baseball bat, it's a rather extreme case, and it does happen, but I'd say that it's a more depersonalizing action to kill somebody with a gun than it is to draw blood with a knife or with a baseball bat. And so I see some value in banning handguns in the sense that unless there's a very good reason to have the handgun, unless someone can legitimately show they need it to protect themselves, I'm not necessarily saying that that's not the case, but the very easy availability of it, in the one sense, makes it accessible to people who are not criminals, who really don't need the pistols all that much all the time, but in a moment of weakness may find it easier to use and to therefore to kill people. Or, granted, I will certainly grant you that people who are criminals will get the handguns anyway, but for a certain number of criminals, it will be harder to get the handguns when they're banned, and therefore there may be fewer criminals with the handguns.
And anyone found with a handgun is labeled a criminal, so it would tend to urge people not to carry them.
I'd like to say is that in this state, It is pretty hard for an average guy to get a pistol. You do.
Well, someone brought an Uzi onto this campus, so I don't, you know.
Well,
people probably bought it on the black market, something which, I mean, if you're a citizen, a law-abiding person, and you want to go out and get yourself a handgun the right way, the lawful way, it's a hell of a lot harder than it is to go out and buy a gun.
Okay, now, for instance, could you just walk into a gun store and buy
an Uzi? No.
No. Could you go into a store and buy a double-barreled shotgun?
Sure could.
Without a weight. Okay, what's to prevent you from taking the barrel down to 14 inches, sawing off the stock? You have a handgun.
Oh, nothing. Nothing. But that, who would do that?
Lots of people do that. That's how a lot of liquor stores get held up.
I hear about lots of sawed-off shotguns. And with regards to selling Uzis, I read an article a few weeks ago that said a couple of kids bought an Uzi at a Port Jefferson store, and there was nothing illegal about it.
Yeah, it was a rifled Uzi.
Well, whatever kind it was, it's still an automatic weapon, you know? And I can't see a legitimate use for anyone, let alone a couple of kids having one of those.
It's not automatic, though. They sell it to you. It's, it's automatic. It's semi-automatic.
Semi-automatic, but it's very easy to convert those.
Yes, if you wanted a full automatic. But that, if you get caught with that, that's a really stiff federal offense. You're in trouble if you got that.
And
some people will misuse guns. You can't, you're not going to be able to totally clean that up, no matter what. I think that, people should have the right to buy a gun. A pistol, it has to be regulated. Too many people, like you said, most people don't need a pistol. Most people don't. Some people feel they should, and because of where they live, And, you know, they should go after that so that people feel safe in the streets, you know, and they don't have to worry about these things.
I don't feel safe in the streets if people are, who are carrying guns because they individually decided that they need
no,
to.
No, but you see, I don't carry a gun, and I don't advocate that everybody carries a gun, but I think that, you know, everyone should have the right to go out and buy a rifle if they want. If they want to shoot, they like shooting, they like hunting or something, I don't think...
Yes, but a lot of people like hunting humans, you know, and I'll tell you,
those,
a number
like
of times...
Most of those people will, most criminals will buy a gun for off the street because, you know, you can't trace it as easily.
But
and,
you can't trace it as easily because there's so many guns around.
It's
you know?
Much easier, especially you can't buy a gun if you're a felon, a convicted felon.
I think if every gun in the hands of a civilian was illegal, it would be a lot easier to find the guns. Right now you have legal guns, you have illegal guns, and you don't know for sure if someone carrying a gun is allowed to carry a gun, you know, so it's...
I still don't think, you know, like I said, what about people who hunt? What about people who enjoy shooting?
Then they would use them on the hunting range, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they pretty much would.
And if,
so they do now.
If you see somebody
I
with a gun, the first question you would ask is, am I on a hunting range? If the answer is no, then the person shouldn't have a gun, correct?
But I think the real problem is that people who commit guns with crimes are not being... crimes with guns are not being kept off the street long enough. You know, the revolving system of justice they
sure.
have where, you know, brutal people, rapists and armed
sure.
robbers, people who probably will go on to murder someone if they haven't yet, get right back out on the street. These people are dangerous. They should not be ever let out.
I think that there are cases where you're absolutely, right about
you know,
that.
They
don't
can't
you think?
Reform, you know, hey, if they could reform these people, that would be great. The way things are now, you know, they don't reform anybody. And some people are certainly irreformable. There's nothing you can do with them.
Don't you think with guns being legal, it'll be easier for such a person getting out of jail to get a gun than if it was illegal?
I think if they banned guns in this country, there would still be a very, very large black market of them in here.
Yeah,
I'm
but
sure
wouldn't it make
it
even just a little bit harder for a criminal to get a gun if it was illegal?
Yeah, I really wouldn't think so. It would drive the price up maybe. But if they really wanted it, they would still be able to get it.
He does have a reasonable point in that illegal guns are fairly widely available.
Oh, sure. I'm sure it is, but I still think that there'd be a significant number of people.
Most criminals who use the guns should be put away longer. And this is for people killing each other in crimes of passion. You know, how far do you want to go to protect people from themselves, you know?
Well, I think that...
I think that, too.
I think, you know, when you're talking about life and death, you have to go pretty far. When you
yeah.
talk about something that's just,
a
minor safety issue...
people who want to own guns, people who are, you know, not going to shoot their wife
or their
lover or whatever.
Well, I'll tell you something.
What about responsible people? Don't we have rights, people who want
certainly.
To own the guns?
Certainly. As a matter of fact, my feeling at this point is that what you're describing, your specific situation... I'm not personally disquieted by that. I can understand.
Can you picture me? I'm not going to hold.
No,
up my word.
I don't
I'm
think
not
I'm
hold up a lick
certainly
well.
Certainly not.
No.
I'm saying I can sympathize with your wanting to have the shotgun. And from what you're describing, it sounds like
I'm
you.
I'm not a big conservative, really. Either,
well,
you know?
For,
I'm not a
whatever right your political thing, philosophy. It doesn't sound
know.
Like you're being unreasonable to want to protect. Your home that way, and the fact is that you're...
No, I don't think I'm unreasonable.
No, but,
I really don't.
But,
you know?
But I'm not arguing really so much, personally, I'm not arguing so much your position as far as wanting to have a rifle, a non-automatic, a non-handgun rifle, purely for means of protection, let's say. What I am concerned about is that there is a large gun lobby in this country that... opposes banning handguns. And the legislation, I don't know exactly how it's worded, but I'm sure there are provisions for permitting people who really can legitimately show that they are responsible and really need the handguns for protection, that it would still permit them to have the handguns. But my impression of organizations like the National Rifle Association, and I'm not putting down everybody that belongs to the National Rifle Association, but my impression about the National Rifle Association, correct me if I'm wrong, is that they oppose just about any, or maybe even all, anti-gun legislation, including handgun legislation.
And I think that there's a... Plastic firearms, Teflon bullets, the whole works.
I agree with you there. They are too extreme.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
Nobody needs a Teflon bullet.
Right, that's why I'm not...
that for unless you're going to... Unless, you know, you're a military man, a policeman who might maybe need to use it.
Right.
Or somebody who wants to shoot a cop through the vest.
Right. I mean, it's exactly.
Have that. That's crazy.
Exactly. Yet the NRA seems to oppose
it. NRA.
All right. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not lumping you. Sure, I'm not lumping you.
The plastic handgun thing, too. If they have, you know, a handgun like that. You know, no. Why should there be one?
Exactly, which raises the question: is there a hidden agenda going on with the NRA, with all its pronouncements about we're just upholding our constitutional right? Well, I don't think any of this legislation is really trying to take any constitutional rights away from them. Number one, and number two, I don't understand why they're so heated about preserving the proliferation. What it comes down to, preserving the proliferation of handguns, and we're talking here about adults and not teenagers, and this to me raises a question about what's going on in their minds, and I'm not saying that they're necessarily all outright evil people, but here to me is another manifestation of evil that is that if not as gory all the time or not as flamboyant as Satanism, and I maybe not quite as extreme as Satanism, is still evil just the same. In other words, I see evil